Trump.
Undoubtedly right, but surely he's the man who could pull the levers to make things better. In other news, as rumours swirl, first with the truth, First Lady Melania Trump.
I was not a participant, was never on Epstein's plane, and never visited his private island.
We'll try to get behind exactly what that means. Sir Sadiq Khan, the London mayor, says stop portraying London as a crime-ridden city. What is the accuracy? And hurtling back to Earth at a speed of more than 20,000 miles an hour...
This could be the worst disaster NASA's ever experienced.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
That was Apollo 13, of course, that held the record for the furthest distance, but they're just inches from a furnace with a 3,000 degree centigrade for those heat plates. It's coming in tomorrow morning. Full details after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump has accused Iran of breaching its ceasefire deal by restricting oil shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran released a statement last night saying management of the strait is now entering a new phase. Downing Street says Keir Starmer spoke with Donald Trump about a practical plan to resume international shipping. The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper reiterated the UK's position on the issue during a speech in London last night.
The fundamental freedoms of the seas must not be unilaterally withdrawn or sold off to individual bidders. And nor can there be any place for tolls on an international waterway. Freedom of navigation means navigation must be free.
Israel and Hezbollah have exchanged fire in Lebanon overnight. The airstrikes further increase tensions ahead of planned peace talks between the US, Iran and Israel in Pakistan tomorrow. The US First Lady Melania Trump has denied having ties with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. In a surprise address from the White House last night, Mrs. Trump said she was not one of his victims and had no knowledge of Epstein's crimes.
The lies linking me with the disgraceful Jeffrey Epstein need to end today. The individuals lying about me are devoid of ethical standards, humility, and respect.
It's unclear what prompted the announcement. The US First Lady also called for congressional hearings for Epstein's survivors. There's to be an increase in the number of specialist police officers on the streets to protect Jewish and other faith communities. The Home Office says both anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hate crime have reached record levels. Russia has announced a ceasefire in Ukraine for Orthodox Easter this weekend. President Zelensky says Ukraine had already proposed the idea and will now act accordingly. It'll come into effect from tomorrow afternoon and last 32 hours. And British holidaymakers are being warned to be aware of additional checks when travelling to Europe from today. The EU's new entry-exit system is due to be fully implemented at all European airports and ports. It'll see the stamping of passports scrapped in favour of visitors registering their biometric details instead. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,603. It closed down 5 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Breakups, that is a tricky one. That's why EE is the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch. You'll get full fibre, but you'll also get EE's most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard. So the whole house can do more like streaming that series, watch your work calls stay crystal clear. Switch to EE today.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New BT Group customers only. 62% availability terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
4 minutes after seven on Friday, April the 10th. Sir Keir Starmer telling ITV News yesterday that he's fed up and the impact that it's having on everyday Britons. And I'm sure we all agree, but isn't he the man who could pull the levers to make matters better? And we'll also take you around the world, particularly actually parts of Europe, where it would appear governments are doing a lot more. have more details on that. In other news, time to stop carrying on, comrade. A message from Defence Secretary John Healey.
We see you. We see your activity over our pipelines and our cables, and we will not tolerate any attempt to damage what our modern way of life depends on so much.
Strong words for Russia and President Putin, but what action can we actually take? Coming back to the fuel crisis, our reporter George Ike has been looking at some measures taken elsewhere.
As the cost of petrol, diesel, heating oil and gas continues to increase due to the conflict in Iran, how are people around the world being helped to get through it? I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
Big news for supermarket chain Lidl and big expansion and more jobs. Oh, good news there. London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan says it's time to stop portraying London as a crime-ridden city. But what do you see as the reality? And fancy a day at work, but actually at the cricket?
604 and final test wicket for Stuart Broad. All of the Oval, all of England rise to one of its finest.
The great Stuart Broad claiming the final two wickets in the Ashes at the Oval in 2023, where, at the Oval, they're putting in extra kit so you can go and watch the cricket and work from the ground.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
While the Prime Minister is undoubtedly right in what we're going to play you him saying yesterday, isn't it also fair to say that to him, and indeed to his colleague the Chancellor, they're the ones who could actually do something about it? Sir Keir telling the broadcasters he's fed up with President Trump and indeed comparing him to Vladimir Putin.
I do think there are bigger things we need to do with the economy, barriers that we need to just knock out of the way. The time it takes for legislation to get through to actually make change for planning and infrastructure is too long.
Yeah.
The energy costs are too long. And that's the second bucket. We have to have energy independence. I'm fed up with the fact that families across the country see their bills go up and down on energy. Businesses' bills go up and down on energy because of the actions of Putin or Trump across the world. And saying to families across the country, saying to businesses across the country, we've got to push up with being on the international market. We need energy independence. And the only way to get energy independence is to go even more quickly to renewables.
Well, it's very difficult to disagree with anything the Prime Minister said, but let's put some of it now to the senior Labour MP, Chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Dame Emily Thornberry, who joins me now. Dame Emily, thank you for joining me. He wants to talk about doing, quotes, bigger things with the economy. He rails against, quotes, the time it takes. Well, he's the man who can change it, surely. Dame Emily, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I mean, we've got so much to do, and it is difficult to know quite where to start. But
you've had 18 months, Dame Emily.
I would add to that list not just changing planning, but also I think when we're talking about the economy, we also ought to be getting closer to Europe. We've started that work, but much more work needs to be done in relation to that. We're about to celebrate, in quotation marks, 10 years since the Brexit vote, and I think that everybody knows that we ought to be closer in economic terms to the European Union.
But how would that help with fuel prices?
Oh, okay. So if you want, well, first of all, because one of the things that we're having to agree is electricity coming over from France and back again. So there has been all kinds of things got in the way in terms of free flow of energy going backwards and forwards from the continent. That's been an important change that we're trying to that the government is trying to arrange at the moment. But the most important thing that we can do when it comes to being independent on energy is renewables, and we must go.
But they're
much
not going to be ready for this crisis, Dame Emily. Can I ask you to address where we find ourselves now? Two-thirds of the public in a poll are calling on the Chancellor Rachel Reeves to scrap part of the petrol tax. If I take you to Spain, they've reduced the VAT on fuel by the equivalent of 26p a litre. Austria and Hungary, roughly the same. The Australian government says it's halving its petrol tax. On and on I go around the world, and in the UK, zero. Dame Emily, why?
Well, I think it's zero so far. I think that the Chancellor has said that there is a cap being put on energy prices at the moment. The question will come in a couple of months' time, and then she will come up with an alternative policy.
Emily Thornberry?
Well, there is a cap on the energy prices at the moment. I mean, there is. So we already have that. So then the question is, what do we do in the longer term? And clearly, we don't know what's going to happen in the longer term anyway, because it's all dependent on the vagaries of Donald Trump, which is an issue in itself. And I think that the evidence is that, you know, given what happened 4 years ago when Putin invaded Ukraine and energy prices went up, given what's happened when Donald Trump decided to invade or to attack Iran and energy prices are going up, it shows us yet again, we have to have a variety of sources of energy, but the most important one is renewables, and we must continue to push on with that. And those that are getting in the way of renewables in their local areas really have to think again about what is in the national interest, because we must depend on ourselves when it comes to energy.
You mentioned Vladimir Putin. If I can take you to another of your senior colleagues, Defence Secretary John Healey. He was talking yesterday about concerns we've had with Russian activity, but three more Russian ships came through the channel unchallenged yesterday. That's six in the last 2 days. The Royal Navy not seizing any of these tankers, not taking any action, despite the Prime Minister who quotes, go after and go in hard. What action are we ever going to see, Dame Emily?
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, the first is I'm on the Joint Committee of National Security Strategy, and we looked at the vulnerability of our pipes, of the pipes that are bringing in information, that are bringing in the things that are on the sea cables. And we've seen recently Russian subs investigating those and us just watching them that.
But watch them?
Well, technically they're not doing anything illegal.
But why did the Prime Minister say we were going to seize them then, Dame Emily?
They haven't said they're going to. They're the submarines. There's the oil tankers coming from Russia, which are bringing in oil that is supposed to be sanctioned and is not supposed to be going elsewhere.
The shadow fleet, but we haven't.
No.
Do we have the powers, yes or no?
Listen, I mean, we have the powers to go after the shadow fleet.
So why aren't we doing it?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think we should be much more assertive when it comes to the shadow fleet. When it comes to the submarines
cables. You're never normally backward at coming forward. Why don't you get the Prime Minister on the phone and say, come on, Sakir, we've actually got to show some action here.
I have made my views clear.
And what's his
response? I've made my views completely clear. I've not spoken directly to the Prime Minister about it, but I have made my views clear.
So you agree with me and most of my listeners. We are being taken for fools and slightly humiliated by the Kremlin here, Dame Emily.
How many frigates do we have at the moment? I've always said we need more frigates. I think we've got about seven. We just don't have
the
naval...
The one we need is in dock, unfortunately. There were water supply issues.
So, you know, we have chronic underfunding of our Navy, and I have said for more than a decade we need more frigates, and we need more ships. And we are an island nation, and we cannot defend ourselves without it. And that, for me, is a priority. Obviously, the problem with building ships is that in turn takes a while, and it is shocking that under, you know, 14 years, they simply weren't investing in the Navy, and now this is the fruits of that.
I must move on. More power to you. More wind in your sails. Dame Emily Thornberry, always enjoy our conversation. Thank you. You chair the Foreign Affairs Select Committee. Let's bring into the conversation Sir Gavin Williamson, who, of course, is Conservative MP and served as Defence Secretary. If we may, we'll talk a little bit about the Prime Minister and levers he could or could not pull. But can we just stay with this defence issue? As a former Defence Secretary, what do you make of Sir Keir saying, and I'll quote directly here, we will go after the Shadow Navy, the ships, we'll go hard, and yet no action has been taken? Sir Gavin, morning to you.
Good morning. It's disappointing. The Navy does have the capability to do so, but you've got to back it up with political will as well. The English Channel is our waterway. We should be able to control it along with the French. That's certainly something that we need to be seeing happen. But it's whether Keir Starmer is willing to take the risk to do that, and he seems to be saying the words but not taking the action.
You're a political watcher, Sir Gavin. What do you make? Dame Emily was fairly outspoken. She thinks more should be done, but she doesn't seem to have much support elsewhere within her party. Is that a fair characterisation?
I think that's a fair, very fair characterisation. I sit on the same committee as Emily. She's very forward-leaning. She's absolutely right in what she is saying, because Russia doesn't respect appeasement, nor does China. Actually, it will only respect the fact that Britain acts in a strong way. And Britain is a target for Russia. We've seen that in what the Secretary of State has just said, in terms of how Russia's been looking at the cables underneath the sea. Russia sees Britain as a key agitator, one of those nations that will stand up to it. But we can't just use words. We have to back that up with action, and we have to back that up with investment.
Boris Johnson says, tells the Daily Telegraph, Britain would win global respect if it seized Shadow Fleet ships. Would you concur with what the former Prime Minister says there, Sir Gavin?
Absolutely. And I think Boris would have been one of those Prime Ministers that wouldn't have just said the words, he would have taken the action as well.
Finally, let's talk a little bit about what we heard from Sir Keir in the Gulf. He's fed up with Trump, he's fed up with Putin and the impact it has on folks back here at home. But you served in government. There must be levers that he and or the Chancellor could pull, Sir Gavin.
Massive levers. OK, so at the moment, the Treasury are getting hundreds of millions of pounds extra revenue through VAT on fuel.
20 million a day, they reckon, Sir Gavin. Yeah. £140 a week.
The price has shot up. The Chancellor of the Exchequer came to the House of Commons to make a statement, but basically said she was going to review things. This isn't action. This is not sort of leadership. This is sort of wetness in the extreme. It's like everyone is facing a challenge, whether it's heating fuel, whether it's petrol prices, yet she just dithers and she sort of fumbles around, sort of no doubt as a great economist, considering everything but doing nothing. She could do so much more. And actually, the issue is we can actually have an impact. It's not just on renewables. We actually have a sodding load of oil and gas in the North Sea that actually could make an enormous difference. And people say, oh, well, it's all international prices. Well, actually, if we took a different approach to how we extracted that oil and gas in the North Sea, we could actually use GB Energy, which this government has created, but does absolutely sod all other than try to buy solar panels from sort of slave labour camps in China. You know, we could actually use that to actually sort of get some of that oil and gas, and we could have production sharing agreements like the Emiratis do, like the Saudis do with producers in those countries to guarantee prices of oil and gas that we actually own ourselves in this country. But there's no imagination. There's a total unwillingness to take big political action.
If only we could get you to come down off the fence. Sir Gavin Williamson, thank you, Conservative MP and former Defence Secretary, indeed former Chief Whip. I suppose I'd better apologise. There's been some fairly choice language from both parties there, both Dame Emily and Sir Gavin, goodness knows. But over to you. We'll be telling you later in the show the measures that other countries are taking, and we'll get into more detail regarding that Shadow Fleet operation as well. The 7:15 LBC News headlines. Oh, and after the news, we need to tell you an intriguing story over in the United States. We'll go a minute late to the news. This is First Lady Melania Trump in the White House.
The false smears about me from mean-spirited and politically motivated individuals to gain financially must stop.
But why is she saying that now? Is the First Lady trying to be first with the truth as she sees it? More after this. News headlines then, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has accused Iran of breaching its ceasefire deal with the US over its handling of the Strait of Hormuz. The US First Lady, Melania Trump, has denied having ties with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And British holidaymakers are being warned to be aware of additional checks when travelling to Europe from today. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and 4 at Orpington. It's because of the emergency works which are still taking place following a fuel spillage. Also on the M25, it's very busy anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel. Queues on the A12 northbound up to junction 19 at the Boreham Interchange. It's because of a fuel spillage. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing bridge works. So that means the M4's very slow eastbound onto the elevated section. Southeastern trains remain delayed between Bromley and Grove Park, and the Mildmay line is suspended between Clapham Junction and Willesden Junction.
This is LBC.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with Pension Bee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Yeah. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 7:21, Daniel will be the first caller on this. Who can tell you? Just some, not all of the front pages. We mentioned there the Melania Trump story, and the Melania Trump is on the front of many of your papers this morning. The Daily Mail, Melania's sensation quotes, "I'm not Epstein's victim." There is the photograph on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. "I had no relationship with Epstein." We are looking at this in more detail. You have to say, and this is a rather cynical older journalist in me, why is she choosing to say this now? What's coming down the line? What is about to be revealed, one wonders. The other big story is, of course, the one we're looking at, the Daily Mirror. "We see you, Vlad." A picture of Vladimir Putin and of course, the UK Defence Secretary John Healey, Russia sabotage threat. And one other story I'll mention to you is the front page of The Sun. And with extraordinary timing on the eve of the Grand National, which is the big race when much of the country, not all of the country, much of the country decides to have a flutter. Remember, when the funds stop. Green leader Zach Polansky wants to ban horse racing, despite the millions of people who enjoy it, the hundreds of thousands of people who work through it, and the billions of pounds it makes the economy. For some bizarre reason, Zach Polansky of the Greens would stop it. Exquisite timing, as I say, for that. Go to the LBC app for more details on the Donald Trump or Melania Trump story. There's a picture of Melania with Donald Trump. Trump claims he was blindsided by Melania's shock White House address regarding Epstein. I'll have more on that. Daniel, we're going to talk about fuel, but I've got the opportunity to continue the Russian conversation going, so as long as you can hold, I want to bring in the conversation Christopher Steele, who's former head of the MI6 Russia desk, director of Orbis Business Intelligence, and joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Cecile, with your experience of Russia and Russian affairs. Why are they doing what they're doing at this moment? Good morning.
Hello there, Nick. Yeah, I think the Gugi, as it's called, the Russian Navy's main directorate for deep sea research, has been conducting these sort of operations for some years, and in fact was one part of the Russian armed forces that was well funded throughout the post-Soviet period. So it doesn't come as a surprise that this is what they're doing. I think the timing is significant, and also the target in the UK. The fact is that the timing, I suspect, relates to the Iran war, particularly as people have taken their eye off home waters and our regional defence in Europe, and indeed off the Ukraine war itself, which is at the core of this. And I think the UK, because the UK has emerged since Donald Trump was re-elected in the States as Russia's main foreign adversary after Ukraine, particularly because it's supporting Ukraine in a way that Donald Trump's America is not anymore.
What action should the Royal Navy or the Prime Minister be taking?
I think we have to study what they're doing and try and assess whether this is just wreckying or whether they're actually trying to lay real ordnance on these vital cables for future conflict. I think it is very worrying that the Russians are behaving this aggressively. They, of course, regard themselves at war with us, even though we don't regard ourselves at war with them. And the problem comes, I think, Nick, is that where do we actually define a threshold of war? Because the Russians define this much lower than we do. And if one of these cables is attacked and our financial system or our energy system goes down, we're going to be facing, you know, a shooting war with Russia, which is very dangerous.
Boris Johnson says we could earn global respect if we were to seize some of the shadow fleet. Christopher, how do you respond to that?
Yes, again, I agree with that, but I don't think we can do it independently of our allies. And we have to be sure, for example, the United States is on side because of the logistics of some of this. Now, it's vital that we don't make threats and not follow them through. And I think that's the risk in this case. As you know, at least one or two key shadow fleet vessels have passed through the English Channel this week, and nothing seems to have been done about them. The other thing that's happening here, interestingly, is because of the war in Iran and America's decision to lift some of the restrictions on Russian oil exports, some of these ships are reflagging to Russian flags, which means that they can be more, it's more difficult in legal terms to intercept them. And it's easier for the Russian Navy and the Russian armed forces and Russian state to defend them. So we're again, the Iran war is impacting our ability to do this.
Lastly, Sir Gavin Williamson, the former Conservative Defence Secretary, says that all that Russia really respects, excuse me, really respects is a degree of force, which is very easy for him to say sitting in his study, easy for me to say sitting in this radio studio. It's very different for the brave men and women of the Navy or the SAS or SBS, but would that be the way to confront Russia?
I think we obviously have to try and avoid a shooting war with Russia, but we have to be clear, particularly with our allies, that we have the capability both to monitor what the Russians are doing in our seas and also to stop them if necessary, if they go beyond a certain point. As I say, I think the problem at the moment is we haven't defined what that point is and where the threshold would lie for taking actual military action against these operations.
Christopher, thanks. Thanks for your time this morning. Christopher Steele, former head of the MI6 Russia desk, director of Orbis Business Intelligence. We might talk Russia. We're also going to be talking about fuel. Just to remind you, later in the show, we will take you literally around the world where so many other nations would be seem to be doing considerably more. Daniel in Golders Green on this. I think you're one of my fuel checkers, unless I've got my facts wrong. Morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Nick. Absolutely cracking show, as usual. Loving it.
Yes, yes, you are my fuel tracker. What do you think should happen? That they reckon, actually, this was last week's figure, they were taking £20 million a day. It's probably more like 25 or 30 million extra a day. What should they be doing?
Well, exactly, Nick. We've heard Keir Starmer talk about how he's fed up with Trump and Putin affecting global energy prices. Well, frankly, as a taxpayer and an energy bill payer, I'm fed up of hearing Keir Starmer and his wretched government constantly blaming other people when there are lots of things they could be doing themselves. For example, they could institute a temporary six-month cut, 5p cut in fuel duty at the pump. They could give council taxpayers who also pay energy bills £150 off energy bills temporarily. They could encourage the energy companies and other companies to stop profiteering. There are so many things they could do, Nick, and they are raking in £20 million a day in fuel duty.
North of that now, and it's about an additional £25 million a day. Daniel, do go on.
Yeah, sorry. So, thank you. Yeah, £25 million a day, and they're sitting there seeking to blame other people. I'm fed up of it, Nick, and many of your listeners will be fed up of hearing ministers come on your show and blaming everyone, blaming 14 years of the Tories, blaming COVID, blaming Ukraine, blaming Trump, blaming Putin, and that where they never blame their own policies, their own energy policies. They've got net zero levies, green levies, VAT on energy bills. There are so many things that this government could do, and they're not doing a single thing.
Lastly, can I ask you, where are you on the idea of getting some of the benefits of North Sea oil? Of drill, baby drill out at sea. Daniel.
Absolutely, Nick. I'm in favour of it. It could safeguard 100,000 British jobs in oil and gas. It could help reduce our energy prices. And the government already touted GB Energy, £8 billion reportedly, that they're investing in GB Energy. Why aren't we using it to use up our own natural resources? It's madness.
Safe driving this weekend, because I know you've got a vehicle, because you're one of my fuel trackers. Daniel, thank you for that. 7:28. Let's go to social media for some of the texts and other messages that are coming in. I think Dave in Orpington's put his finger on it. It's easy for MPs to bleat about renewables, which I am in favour of long term, says Dave, but I can't put solar in my petrol tank. The government could act now, but are choosing not to. Same subject, this comes in, well, as regards to the Russian conversation we're having, I'm sorry, Ian in Sunderland. Putin in sheer panic, as John Healy, fresh from sunning himself in the south of France, tells Russia that if any more of the Shadow Fleet are sighted in UK waters, we will not hesitate to deploy the Salvation Army, Cub Scouts and the Girl Guides using canoes. That's quite funny. COS in Causdon. The problem with price caps is the government have to subsidise the difference. This will cause us more problems in the future. The only option? Tax the ultra-rich more and all the businesses creaming money from us, i.e. price gouging. But it would only be a temporary... Bear in mind, it's the additional 25 million they're taking a day that we're looking at, COS. But thank you for that. Coming up directly after the news, was it Bill Clinton who once said, I did not have sex with that woman? Well, there's a sort of similar theme from now First Lady Melania Trump.
I have never been legally accused or convinced of a crime in connection with Epstein sex trafficking, abuse of minors and other repulsive behaviour.
And apparently even her husband didn't know she was going to be saying that. So what is going on? Plus, big news for...
Yep, that British. Now that's big on quality and always little on price.
Good luck. Big news for Lidl, opening 50 more stores and, of course, jobs to come too. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has accused Iran of doing a very poor job of allowing oil tankers to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Mr. Trump made the comments on social media ahead of planned peace talks between the US and Iran in Pakistan tomorrow. The US First Lady, Melania Trump, has denied having any links to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. In a surprise White House address last night, Mrs. Trump said she was not one of his victims and had no knowledge of his crimes. And British holidaymakers are being warned to be aware of extra checks when travelling to EU countries from today. Fingerprints and face scans are being replacing the stamping of passports as part of efforts to strengthen border security. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain moving in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Mark Rutte, the NATO chief, speaking in Washington, D.C. after meeting with President Trump and delivering what I think might be referred to as a bit of a broadside against European nations in NATO, that there has been, to some extent, he argued, an unhealthy dependence on the United States for the defence of the European continent. These are the kind of things that Trump is saying. He's putting it rather differently, of course, but in that regard, I don't think Mark Rutte is wrong.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it, and the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
No, forget that. You just have
keep dancing. Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33, Kevin will talk the business of energy and energy costs and fuel and diesel and petrol in a moment, but into the broader world of business now, to the eyes of Susanna Streeter. Susanna is Chief Investment Strategist at the Wealth Club and joining me now. And can I refer you to the main story on the front page of today's Daily Mail? Ed Miliband's rush to net zero has been blamed for an AI giant shelving a multi-billion pound investment in Britain. What firm were they talking about? Morning, Susanna.
Yes, they're talking about OpenAI because it had these plans for this Stargate UK project, including a large dentist centre in northeast England and lots of other opportunities that was lauded back in September when, of course, you probably remember that deal was announced with great fanfare, a £30 billion investment in the UK tech sector overall. So I think this really is going to be a bit of a blow for the government because it's had this setback, these plans have been put on pause, and it's partly because of high energy costs in the UK. Apparently, that is a part of the reason for this pause button being pushed. That is, of course, because energy costs are much higher than, say, the United States and even Germany and France, where there are more subsidies and a lower base cost of energy.
It's a characterisation from the front page that it is Red Ed's ideology that has scuppered the deal. How fair is that in your view, do you think, Susanna?
Well, I think the green levers are a meaningful slice of the extra cost for businesses on energy bills, but it's not the majority of the bill. And if you remove them entirely, energy would still be expensive compared to other countries. I think that's because we've got the system of marginal pricing. Gas sets the electricity price even when renewable power is cheaper. So when gas prices surge, electricity prices surge with them. But if you did strip them off the bill, they could fall by 15% on average. But that depends, of course, on how large or small your company is, because there are already subsidies for large, intensive energy industries.
Big news for Lidl, and why should we also be saying cheers to them too? Susanna?
Yes, well, this is really interesting news. We know that Lidl has been on this expansion drive. It's going to be opening 50 new stores, but also a pub in East Belfast. And this is because of strict local licensing laws that mean if a supermarket wants to sell alcohol, it has to buy a license that's been surrendered by another business, such as a pub that's shutting. So Lidl has jumped through those hoops because in this area in East Belfast, two licensed premises had closed. But I think this will be a one-off. I don't think you're going to see middle aisle items piling up on the bar. But apparently the pub will sell a selection of products from its beer, wines and spirits ranges, as well as those of local producers. But it certainly shows that Lidl is on a roll. And of course, as the cost of living squeeze intensifies, more shoppers are going to be trading down to cheaper brands, and Lidl looks likely to clean up.
Big ambitions for Lidl. Good luck to them. By the way, I've often said on the show, I'm a huge fan of the middle of Lidl. I don't know if you've ever done it, but the most most extraordinary, everything from Wellington boots to hedge trimmers you can find. It's an extraordinary.
Always drawn.
You go to the middle of Lidl as well, do you? You and I.
Go to the middle of Lidl. I am a bargain hunter.
Yeah, we all.
Extraordinary.
I think we all are now. Okay, so you're a bargain hunter, but are you a cricket fan?
Well, I have been to cricket matches and they are very long, aren't they? Can be extremely entertaining, great moments of drama, but you have to wait a long time. So it is interesting what we're seeing at the Oval because cricket fans are being invited to dupe their bosses so that they're working from Oval because the cricket ground is saying, look, we've got great super fast Wi-Fi, come and work here instead and catch a match at the same time. It's an interesting marketing strategy.
Lastly, something you don't find in the middle of Lidl, to my knowledge, is gentleman's relish, and soon you won't be finding it anywhere. What is it? And it was, of course, beloved of James Bond, as I recall, from Ian Fleming's novels, wasn't it?
That is right. Now, to say you love it or you hate it is an understatement with gentleman's relish, even more so than Marmite, because it is heavy in anchovy. So it's known as Patum Perium. Sold since the 19th century, and it's now sadly been pulled from shelves because AB World Foods, who has produced it for around two decades, has just said, look, there aren't enough people who like it. And even though there is this real niche customer base, it's simply not viable. So it's stopped production. But if you do love it, I am partial to anchovies, actually. I don't mind gentleman's relish. And if you do love it, you can still buy it in certain places in London. Fortnum & Mason will be continuing to produce and sell their version of the relish. And also Simpsons in the Strand, apparently the chef, has already been creating its version of this very smelly.
We've done the whole gamut here today, Susanna. We've gone from Lidl to Fortnum & Mason with a bit of Simpsons in the Strand in the middle. Well done to you. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for your help this week. Susanna Streeter, Chief Investment Strategist at Wealth Club, taking us to almost 7:39. Kevin is in Basingstoke. Let's talk energy prices with you. Would you like to see the government do more? Hi, Kevin.
Well, I mean, most countries haven't done anything. I mean, I think 30 have, 170 haven't, including America. I mean, Trump started this war, and he is drill, baby, drill, but fuel costs in America have gone up 30%.
Yeah, but hold on, matey. They're now paying $4. I mean, if you were, if petrol's 160 a litre, we're paying about £6.25 a litre, and they're paying £4, and they're $4, and they're going crazy. It's about half the price, mate.
Well, that's because they haven't got they haven't got any NHS. I mean,
well, they have got a form of NHS. They have got a
form of
NHS.
Trump's just,
but I don't know that. I mean, God bless the NHS, but I don't know that it's functioning particularly well for the £3-something billion we give it every week.
Well, it's better than the USA. 50% of all bankruptcies is because of unaffordable medical bills.
And but I don't think your point about energy holds, honestly, Kevin, because if we call it gas or petrol, it's so much cheaper there. Kevin, have you got...
No safety net.
Pardon? Sorry, sir?
I mean, if Margaret Thatcher hadn't privatised North Sea gas and oil, we would have made three times as much, just like Norway has. They've got a national wealth fund of £1.5 trillion.
But just lastly, when we come to Sir Keir Starmer saying in that interview down in the Gulf that he's fed up, and he is right, I mean, he should be doing more, Kevin. Surely you agree with that?
Well, yeah, maybe he should be doing more, but maybe he will do more. We don't know yet. I mean, energy prices...
We're in the sixth week of this war. How much longer have we got to wait? Kevin, have a good weekend. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree, but disagree to part, and I look forward to speaking with you again. Now, we talked about the United States, and although most of it's as fast asleep at the moment, they're going to wake up to an extraordinary day after some revelations from the First Lady. Is she getting in first with this?
Numerous fake images and statements about Epstein and me have been circulating on social media for years now. I have never had any knowledge of Epstein's abuse of his victims. I was never involved in any capacity. I was not a participant, was never on Epstein's plane, and never visited his private island. The false smears about me from mean-spirited and politically motivated individuals and entities looking to cause damage to my good name, to gain financially and climb politically, must stop.
To Freddie Gray, who regularly helps us with US affairs. Freddie is deputy editor of The Spectator magazine, edits its US edition, and joins me now. Freddie, you've been in and around the news business long enough. Can you work out what's going on? Is she getting in first before something that's going to come down the line later today or the weekend? Freddie, morning.
Good morning, Nick. It certainly sounds that way. Another possible interpretation is that far from the Iran war being some giant complicated distraction from the Epstein files, it could be that the Trumps are trying to bring up the Epsteins to distract from the disaster that is the Iran war. I think it may be that crazy. But it's long been rumoured that there's something in the Epstein files suggesting that Epstein actually knew Melania well before Trump and introduced her to Donald Trump. Andrew Lowney, the royal biographer, has made this claim quite a few times. I think it's based on an allegation that is contained within the Epstein files, but it is just an allegation. It is just rumour. So Melania, I think, is probably getting out ahead of perhaps something that's coming. But it was very strangely timed, and like everything Melania does, very just strange entirely.
Are we able to say how many of the Epstein files have been published and how much or how many are still being sat on, Freddie?
We're not able to say entirely. I believe it's most have now come out, but there is still a significant number. It's not known. You know, most of them have been withheld on national security grounds. Mm. There's a lot of speculation behind that, and a lot of intrigue about what they might say about Trump and so on. It may be that the Trumps know something's coming in the next few days and they're trying to get ahead of it, but it may be something even weirder.
Lastly, Bill Gates, I think, will testify this summer. The latest of the big names to tip up and testify, Freddie.
Yes, well, his reputation has suffered a calamitous drop. And, of course, he's always been at the heart of all conspiracy theories about COVID, Epstein, telephone wires, no matter what. So that'll be another very, very intriguing session.
Freddie, you're going to be busy again, I sense, today or over the weekend, because you've got to think something's coming down the line. Freddie Gray, thank you. Deputy Editor of Spectator magazine edits its US edition. A couple more of your texts and emails coming in on regards to what they could or should not be doing in this country, should they be doing more. Suing Cambridge, Rachel Rees is simply a waste of space. Selling the British public and throwing us under a bus. At the very least, cut the duty on diesel for businesses. Well, on that point, Sue, for a car, if you run a diesel car, this is a car, I read this morning that your week, if you fill it up, it's gone up by a little over 30 quid, £30. That's a car. Imagine if you run a van or a lorry, a truck or a bus, a coach. How much has that gone up by? So should we be doing more?
As the cost of petrol, diesel, heating oil and gas continues to increase due to the conflict in Iran, how are people around the world being helped to get through it? I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
That's in the next hour. Coming up after the news, Defence Minister Luke Pollard with more details of exactly what we are, or not doing, with a supposed Russian shadow fleet in the English Channel. It's 7:45, LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has accused Iran of doing a very poor job of allowing oil tankers to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. The US First Lady Melania Trump has denied having ties with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And police in London and Manchester have been given an extra £5 million in funding to increase patrols around places of worship. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west later, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and 4 at Orpington. It's because of the emergency repair works and it's very slow on the approach. Still very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel after that lorry broke down earlier, although all the lanes are now back open. In central London, Regent Street is closed southbound at New Burlington Street because a bus has broken down, so that's causing delays. On the trains, the Mildmay line is suspended between Clapham Junction and Wilson Junction because of a track problem. But better news for South Eastern, they're now back up and running between Bromley North and Grove Park. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Piccadilly, Metropolitan District and Bakerloo lines.
This is LBC.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance? And you can get club card prices on the house. What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance. And it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco home insurance. Every little helps.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper... to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato...
whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chilli...
woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on all-electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term. OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money. Less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Oh, You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Forget that.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49 is the time. Tom in Winchester. Tom, what should the government... I agree with the Prime Minister. We are all, quote, fed up. What should the government be doing?
Yeah, good morning, Neil. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Not at all.
So I just listen to your show, like, every day because I drive 40 miles in the morning and on my way back, I listen to Tom Sawbrick every day. So,
you go to work with Nick, you come home with Tom. What a fantastic day you have, Monday through Friday.
So I drive, like, 40 miles in the morning, 40 miles in the evening. So I'm one of those people who have been really affected by the fuel prices because my weekly costs have gone up by, like, £25. So... for £100 a month, which is quite a lot.
That's a lot.
And you remember when the war started, the petrol price in Winchester was like £129, and now it's like £165. So,
what would you like to see the government do to address that £100 a month that you hit by, Tom?
Well, probably just it's not my area of expertise. But I don't know about the fuel taxes that the government should have, but they should be doing something. I know Keir Starmer said he's fed up, but we are fed up as well. Richard Lee said that she would stop like profiteering. But she has done nothing so far. The fuel price is going up every day. So I'm one of those people who can still be able to afford the increased prices. But there are other people who are really suffering, especially with the people who use, heating oil for home. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Tom, I've got to go because I've got a government minister. Safe driving to you. At least you're in a beautiful part of the country in Winchester. I hear what you say. If you can stay tuned in the next hour, you'll hear what other nations are doing, which I would suggest is possibly more practical help. But thanks for your input. Have yourself a safe weekend. Safe driving, Tom. Thank you. Now, I mentioned government minister. Let's go now to Luke Pollard, who's Minister for Defence Readiness and Industry, and, of course, a Labour MP as well. And before I speak with you, Minister, let's just remind my listeners what we heard effectively from, in a sense, your boss or Defence Secretary, John Healey.
To President Putin, I say, we see you. We see your activity over our cables and our pipelines. And you should know that any attempt to damage them will not be tolerated and will have serious consequences.
Minister, can you expand on that, quote, serious consequences? What does that mean? Morning to you, sir.
Yes, good morning, Nick. What we've done in declassifying these Russian covert activities is place it in the public domain to call out Putin and to show him very clearly that he won't be able to get away with this hybrid warfare, this deniability that he often tries to do. We've seen Russian activity in the Atlantic and in the Baltic, where the Russians have disrupted undersea cables and then denied it. So a key part of our activity over the past few days has been to deny their deniability, as the military phrase goes for it, to remove his ability to do so. Now, you wouldn't expect me to be able to go into all the details of what we would be doing if they succeed in damaging any of our cables, because that's precisely the information that Putin wants to get out of us. But we've been very clear that those undersea cables are essential for our economic activity, are essential for our national security. And as we've seen, as announced by John Healey, the Defence Secretary, yesterday, we're deploying our Royal Navy and RAF assets in support of defending those undersea cables. We'll continue to do that because we know that Russia's malign threats and against the UK continue. And when there's all eyes on the Middle East and the conflict in Iran, the UK is continuing to defend our home waters, defend our own homeland from those Russian threats at the very same time as supporting our allies and our bases in the Middle East.
Minister, how likely is it, you mentioned the Iran conflict, how likely is it that Putin has seized the initiative and is exploiting understandable global attention on that affair?
So we do need to make sure that in these uncertain times, we're taking steps to increase our military posture, to increase our activities. It's precisely for that reason that the Defence Secretary called out Putin yesterday. It's precisely for that reason why we have Royal Navy ships in the Atlantic globally deployed and our activities in support of our friends and allies in the Middle East to try and reopen the Strait of Hormuz as well.
you talk about globally deployed and our Royal Navy. You'll be aware it took us a rather long time to get HMS Dragon on its way down to the Eastern Mediterranean, and sadly it's currently tied up. Do you really think Vladimir Putin or his colleagues in the Kremlin are going to be that worried by what your colleague, the Defence Secretary, says?
Calling out Putin is a key part of our deterrence activity. Revealing their undersea covert activities is exactly the opposite of what Putin wants. He wants the deniability. He wants those activities to remain secret. We're not playing his game. We're calling those out. But I'm proud of the work that our Royal Navy is doing. HMS Dragon sailed at speed to the Middle East as part of usual deployments. And I'm afraid there's lots of people writing stuff about naval deployments that they clearly don't know much about. It's usual to have ships rotate their through forms of readiness to resupply, to restock, to re-ammunition. That's exactly what Dragon's doing as part of that international effort in defending our bases and our allies in the Eastern Mediterranean.
But Minister, you said it sailed at speed. It took weeks to get to that theatre of operation.
Well, HMS Dragon was about to go into refit. She was brought out of refit and processed in 6 days rather than the 6 weeks that it would have taken normally. That was an extraordinary effort by our Royal Navy personnel and the civilians that are operating at Portsmouth Naval Base. That was the right thing to do to be able to deploy her to the Middle East when the request came from the Chief of Defence Staff. But as we now know, because the Defence Secretary revealed it yesterday, at that very moment where people were making stories about the Royal Navy not being ready, not being deployable, we had our Navy tracking these Russian submarines in the Atlantic. We were monitoring their activities, and we weren't able, because of the nature of that mission, to reveal it at the time. We are now. And I have enormous pride in our Royal Navy, as I think the British public do, that they can see their activities supporting our homeland defence and supporting our allies overseas. And that's the right thing that we do, to continue to give them the kit and equipment that they need.
But if I move you from the Atlantic to the English Channel, you'll be aware of some Russian ships that have sailed through, three yesterday, three the day before that. What Royal Navy deployment do we have for the English Channel?
So we always keep a Royal Navy ship on constant watch. So HMS Somerset and HMS Mersey, for instance, have been involved in some of the tracking activity of Russian vessels. But it's precisely because our actions against Russia's shadow fleet is working that we're now seeing Putin having to escort his shadow fleet with Russian frigates, and in many cases now taking the long way around the United Kingdom instead of going through the English Channel, with them going round Scotland and Ireland, adding extra time and cost to the Russian shadow fleet operation. We know there's 200 Russian shadow fleet vessels that are no longer on the high seas thanks to the sanctions regime that the UK and our allies have put in place. And we're going to continue to close the noose on those operations because it helps fund Putin's illegal war in Ukraine.
But there is a sense we need more frigates. I wonder if I can just briefly play to you something one of your senior colleagues, Dame Emily Thornberry, who of course chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee, said to me about deployment and the amount of availability within the Royal Navy. And just a warning, Dame Emily does use some rather choice language.
We have chronic underfunding of our Navy, and I have said for more than a decade we need more frigates, and we need more ships. And we are an island nation, and we cannot defend ourselves without it. And that, for me, is a priority.
Do you concur with Dame Emily?
I do. I made my first speech in the House of Commons back in 2017 calling for more frigates. And it's precisely for that reason that only a few weeks ago I was in Rosyth cutting steel on our latest Type 31 frigate, HMS Bulldog. It's why we saw HMS Active, a new Type 31 frigate, rolled out of the sheds. On the other side of Scotland, in Glasgow, we're seeing the Type 26 frigates being built in the shipyards there. And in addition to the frigates that we're building, we're expanding our Royal Navy's autonomous capabilities. That means adding uncrewed and autonomous ships and submarines alongside those crewed platforms for the very first time. That's a huge increase in Royal Navy lethality, and that is being implemented as part of our increase in defence funding.
Now, you're joining us from a naval base in Devonport. To explain to my listeners, I have a video link up with you. What is that vessel behind you, and is she seaworthy?
She is, yeah. So I've got HMS Sutherland, a Type 23 anti-submarine warfare frigate behind me. She's just working up now to deploy to sea in the next few days or so. We won't be able to reveal the mission of these
ships. I was going to say, am I allowed to... Well, I'm allowed to ask you where she's going. I sense I'm not going to be getting an answer, though, Minister.
I won't be able to reveal her mission set, no. But what I can say is, you know, week in, week out, we see our Royal Navy frigates, destroyers, the Royal Fleet auxiliary ships as well that do such a superb job supporting our military operations. They're deployed globally. The men and women of our Royal Navy are doing enormously important tasks for our national defence. And I think, although it may be popular in some in our politics to talk them down at the moment, I'm enormously proud of them and I'm proud of the work that they are doing to keep us safe.
Last minute or so together, you'll be aware, and I've referenced this earlier, that ships of the Shadow Fleet sailed through the English Channel yesterday and indeed the day before, despite the Prime Minister saying a fortnight ago, and I quote, to go after the ships. And there have been no seizures. Why and will there be?
So the UK Armed Forces have supported our allies in interdicting Russian Shadow Fleet vessels. We've now
you haven't interdicted any of them, Minister. None have been interdicted.
So our allies have, and we retain the ability to do so. I'm not going to be able to give you, I'm afraid, Nick, the ship and the time of our interdiction, but we have the ability to do so, and it's precisely because of those new powers that we have that we're seeing Russia go the long way round Britain.
But they didn't yesterday, Minister. I'm sorry to talk over you, sir. I'm sorry to talk over you, sir, but they didn't yesterday, nor the day before, and there was no interdiction. Why?
So we retain the ability to interdict a vessel at a time of our choosing, Nick. I won't be able to tell you exactly when that will be, but it's precisely that ambiguity and the options available to us that supports that deterrence against Russian activity. And we will be continuing to clamp down on the Shadow Fleet activities, working with our allies to do so. And I'm sure I'll be back on your show talking about further activities when we do them.
Lastly, a word, if I can, the conflict in Iran. It would appear that Israel have been persuaded to throttle back from the heaviest onslaught so far of the conflict. What is the UK government's response to Israel and the shelling that took place the day before yesterday?
I mean, the Prime Minister has been very clear on this. Those strikes are wrong. They must stop. We back a ceasefire, and that ceasefire must lead to a lasting peace, both in Lebanon and in Iran.
Grateful for your time. I hope it goes well with your businesses down at Royal Naval Base in Devonport, which is where Minister of Defence, Readiness and Industry Luke Pollard joined us from. Take us to 1 minute after 8. LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Keir Starmer says he's fed up of seeing families and businesses' energy bills go up because of Donald Trump's actions. The Prime Minister also spoke with the US President last night about the need for a practical plan to try and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran says management of the key shipping route is now entering a new phase, but hasn't elaborated. Former Conservative Defence Secretary Sir Gavin Williamson has told Nick that the government is trying to blame everyone else for the issues.
This is not sort of leadership. This is sort of wetness in the extreme. We actually have a sodding load of oil and gas in the North Sea that actually could make an enormous difference. But there's no imagination. There's a total unwillingness to take big political action.
Elsewhere, Israel and Hezbollah have exchanged fire in Lebanon overnight. The airstrikes further increase tensions ahead of planned peace talks between the US, Iran and Israel in Pakistan tomorrow. The US First Lady, Melania Trump, has denied having ties with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. In an address from the White House last night, Mr. Trump said she was not one of his victims and had no knowledge of Epstein's crimes. The deputy editor of The Spectator magazine, Freddie Gray, has told Nick this morning it's unclear what prompted the surprise announcement.
It's long been rumoured that there's something in the Epstein files suggesting that Epstein actually knew Melania well before Trump and introduced her to Donald Trump. But it is just an allegation, it is just rumour. So Melania, I think, is probably getting out ahead of perhaps something that's coming.
Melania Trump has denied that Epstein introduced her to Donald Trump, calling the claims mean-spirited attempts to defame her reputation. there's to be an increase in the number of specialist police officers on the streets to protect Jewish and other faith communities. The Home Office says both anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hate crimes have reached record levels. Communities in London and Manchester will benefit first from the announcement. British holidaymakers are being warned to be aware of extra checks when travelling to EU countries from today. Fingerprints and face scans are replacing passport stamping as part of efforts to strengthen border security. And NASA says there'll be anxious moments as the Artemis 2 crew re-enters Earth's atmosphere at speeds of around 25,000 miles per hour. Officials say they have full confidence in the four astronauts on board the Orion spacecraft. It'll splash down off the coast of California in the early hours of Saturday morning UK time. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,603. It closed down 5 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain moving in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £40 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh 5 a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 7th of the 4th, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, Chip. 5 minutes after eight, Friday, April the 10th. Coming up in this hour, fueling discontent. The poll that shows two-thirds of the public want the Chancellor, Rachel Rees, to do more to bring down the prices of petrol and diesel. We'll take you not just around Europe, we'll take you around the world and see that other governments, I would argue, are doing considerably more. And we'll come back to that aspect of the conversation. In other news, the benefit of being on benefits.
Let's go Soho, Big Show, Fish Butter, Harry Potter, whole lot. Why not? Just gotta let's do London.
Families on benefits are being given access to London attractions for £1. Those working pay just under £100. How can that possibly be justified? Talking about London, the London Mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan, says it's wrong to depict it as a city with crime, with a high degree of crime or criminal problems. If you live or work in the city, how would you rate London? And tomorrow, they're off.
Tony McCoy, the winning most National Hunt rider of all time, has waited a long time to land his first Grand National. First all round, Tony McCoy.
Tony McCoy, or AP McCoy, now indeed Sir AP McCoy, will join me later in this hour to look ahead to the great race. And then in the early hours of tomorrow morning, hopefully, God willing, it's splashdown for those astronauts. Remember, they've gone the farthest from the planet ever. Before that, it was Apollo 13.
What did you do?
Nothing. I stirred the tanks.
Whoa.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
Let's hope there are no problems. Remember, they will be coming through with those heat plates facing over 2,000 degrees heat. And with the unmanned Artemis 1, it didn't go that well.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
We've been talking over the last few weeks, haven't we? And my thanks again to my fuel trackers. We've been watching as prices go up. It's in the newspaper today that if you have an average-sized family car diesel, I repeat, diesel, it's an extra £30 to fill that car up. That's just an average-sized family car. If you move to one of the big 4x4s, if you move to a van, if you move to a coach, a bus, a truck, what does that mean? So should we be doing more? Well, a lot of you think so. Two-thirds of the public in a poll want the chance to scrap the petrol tax rate. Drivers being hammered by an extra £1 billion at the pumps. It's estimated around £25 million additional money taken in each day by the government. Now, some of that, of course, goes out immediately on the ambulances. I understand that. And the military as well. They need to fuel in their tanks, whatever it might be. But they still seem to be making a lot of money. So what about this pressure? And what about elsewhere around the world? We took a look at this, you may remember, in the very early days of the Iran conflict. So we decided to have another look. LBC's reporter George Ike takes us globetrotting around the world.
It's a conflict affecting people all around the world, but the impact is different from nation to nation, and so is the response by their respective government. In Australia,
fuel supplies may not be guaranteed beyond May, with Australia again on the brink of petrol rationing if the Middle East war is not quickly resolved.
The government down under has set aside more than £520 million worth of low-interest loans to help keep the transport sector moving. And for everyone else, there's been a cut on the tax that they'll pay on fuel at the pumps. Next up, it's Ireland, where a few weeks ago we heard that
excise duty on diesel cut by 20 cent and by 15 cent on petrol until the end of May.
But now protesters say it's not enough as prices continue to rise despite the cuts.
Dublin city centre shut down by fuel protesters, with many tractors, lorries and buses parked up on O'Connell Street overnight.
And no protest is complete without the sound of tractors' horns. Campaigners have been blocking roads demanding a cut in fuel prices. Now the army's been called in to try and help clear the roads across Dublin. From Ireland to Italy now, where the government has spent more than €400 million to cut fuel duty. This has now been extended for another month as fuel prices remain high. Italy is also one of five countries pushing for the EU to bring in windfall taxes on fuel producers so they don't profit from the war in Iran.
The five ministers who wrote to EU Climate Commissioner Wopke Hoekstra pointed out that actions taken at national level on excise duty must be accompanied by a joint effort.
This wouldn't be the first time that the EU had done that. When the full-scale invasion of Ukraine happened in 2022, it meant a 33% tax was brought in on all oil and gas profits that were substantially above the previous year's income. Dan Jorgensen is the European Commissioner for Energy and Housing.
No immediate oil and gas supply shortages in the European Union. We see tightening in certain product markets, notably diesel and jet fuel.
With India considering halting their fuel exports to maintain their own supply, Slovenia introducing rationing at the pumps, and several EU countries looking at tightening spending, it's clear the impact is felt around the world. And whilst the ceasefire is welcome news, the trouble facing people day to day with their bills seems to be here to stay, for now at least.
A musical trip around the world, courtesy of LBC's George Ike, coming to an expert on this in just a moment. I'm just going to read this, it's coming from Kim. And I haven't been thinking about motorbikes. Kim says it's an extra £7 to fill up my husband's motorbike, and that's a lot for a motorbike. Well, we've just looked at average size of a fuel tank on around 15 litres, so an extra £7. Now, the front page of the Daily Express, they are taking actions elsewhere in the world. British tourists have been left stranded on Corsica. Processing fishermen have blocked its ports over the soaring cost of diesel. This is an exclusive in today's Daily Express. Boats have shut off Porto Vecchio and Bonifacio, stopping ferries and cruise ships leaving the Mediterranean island hotspot. Frustrated British tourists are saying, we need to get home. The fishermen began their action at 6 a.m. on Tuesday and have now been joined by Corsican farmers who are blocking key roads as well. Goodness me. Howard Cox, founder of Fair Fuel UK, regularly in the headlines, joins us now. Good to see you again, Howard. What we've looked a little bit at what other countries are doing, and we know that there are, to use the expression again, levers this government could pull. What should they be doing? Howard, morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Nick. Good to be back on your show.
Good to see you.
There's three major things they could be doing. Of course, I'm monitoring 65 countries that are actually either cutting fuel duty or even a minimal things like making sure garages or retailers don't put up prices more than once in a day. Little things like that. Germany's doing that. Mm. But the most important thing is to cut fuel duty and also promise that in the up and coming autumn budget, not to put up fuel duty. It's going back up by 5p. And with the VAT on top of that, it's going to go up by 6p per litre. And there's no way that Rachel Rees seems to be backing down on that promise of putting it up again. The issue there is, I'll say it again, the VAT, that dishonest tax, double taxation, if she cut that, just got rid of the VAT on the fuel duty, that would be a 10p cutting on the price of fuel. And the other one, of course, is the opportunistic profiteering at the pumps. We're still seeing, even on existing stocks, sitting in the forecourts, in their tanks, they're putting up prices, not on new deliveries, And that's the issue. And in the last something like 7 or 8 days, oil has come down by $15 a barrel, but we're still seeing prices going up. And as I've said many times on your show, when oil goes up, we see pump prices going up like a rocket. But when oil prices come down, they come down like a feather and not by the amount they went up by. So there's a number of issues you could get hold of, but for some reason, she's totally blinkered.
I told the listeners just now they're taking direct action in Corsica. Fishermen and others are blockading the port. There's no such metric for this, but what is the level of anger there with people and your colleagues in Fair Fuel UK, Howard?
Well, we've got something like 1.8 million supporters, and I'm getting like about 100 to 200 messages a day from people asking me that we should be taking action, like the things in Corsica, like the things in Dublin, all those sorts of things. I've never been one of those people. I've always worked on objective issues, you know, using independent economic analysis to show that if you increase fuel duty, you're actually disincentivising the most important resource in our lives, transport, and getting us around. The thing that we're seeing at the moment is a continuation of Labour's anti-driver policies related to net zero. And I'm afraid Ed Miliband, he's got a lot of influence over Rachel Rees at the moment. And I'm afraid I can't see her changing her mind, but we're going to keep pushing.
Lastly, you touched on it briefly. Do you see a point where there could be demos in the UK?
Yes, I do think so. I mean, I won't be instigating them, but I've been asked to be taking part in them. There's a big one that could be coming up in the centre of London in the next couple of weeks, and I've been asked to speak at it. It's being arranged at the moment by mainly the trucking fraternity with tractors with the farmers. So I will let you know as soon as I know.
Well, I remember, I can't remember why I spoke with you. If you go back to the late 90s, I remember when the truckers came to town and brought London to a standstill. I can't remember you were involved in that, Howard, but I remember those days.
Yeah, well, I was involved on the fringes of those days, yes, but you're dead right. And, you know, we don't want to get to that situation because what happens...
But there are rumblings, obviously. There are rumblings that the lorry drivers might come to town.
Yeah, they will do. And politicians love the fact that sort of thing, because then they just blame it on everyone else. And it impacts on the wrong people going to work, etc. Those are the sorts of things in terms of when you take that sort of action. But the rumblings are getting louder and louder. You're dead right, Nick.
Howard, I sense we'll talk again before this is through. Look after yourself. Howard Cox, founder of Fair Fuel UK. Calls coming in on that. Howard Cox there referencing people who are at work. Well, that leads us into another conversation after the news.
Come with us for a special tour of the Tower of London, the 1,000-year-old fortress in the heart of the city.
Which I've done with my children when it was younger, and it's fantastic. It's a great day out. Family of four, that'll cost you £111. But if one of the adults is on benefits, the family of four will get in for £4. £4, as opposed to £111. Why bother with work? 8:15 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says Keir Starmer has spoken with President Trump about the need for a practical plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. And police in London and Manchester are to receive £5 million in funding to increase patrols and protection around places of worship. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain moving in from the west later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and 4 Orpington. It's because of the emergency repair works which are having to take place after a fuel spillage. Also, problems continue in central London. Regent Street is very busy southbound heading towards New Burlington Street after that bus broke down earlier. The A40 remains closed both ways. This is between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout for the ongoing bridge works. It means there's a lengthy delay on the M4, which is the diversion route, onto the elevated section. There are delays of about 20 minutes. On the trains, there are minor delays still on the Mildmay line to and from Stratford to both Clapham Junction and Richmond.
This is LBC.
Oh, Fiona's back at the Monkey Safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £91 million. It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching.
Yeah, baby.
Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's draw, EuroMillions, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Hello, beautiful people. Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award.
Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Weekend around the corner, 19 minutes after 8. It's likely that you'll want to fill up your car, your motorbike, your van or whatever, and you're going to take pain at the pumps. Luke's in Dartford. G'day, Luke. What are you going to tell me?
Hiya, Nick. Yeah, I was just calling up just to say about the prices on the actual fuel. It's getting ridiculous. Yesterday, I filled up my van.
Right.
I only needed 36 litres to fill it to the top. Cost me £86.
My goodness me. What does that mean? How much is that? I can't do the sums. How much was that a litre, then?
It was over £2, it was.
And was that on a motorway, or was that just regular?
No, that was regular, it was. It was a garage just up the road from my house, it was.
So that's can you remember, before the conflict started, I mean, it's a difficult question because I can't remember what I was paying for five, 6 weeks ago. Typically, what you paid 86 quid for yesterday, what would that have been?
Well, last week, I did put slightly more in. It was about 40-something litres, and that cost me about 50-something pounds. So, yeah, you was right. It's gone up by about 30-something pounds.
That is awful. Now, the van is necessary for your work? Is that what your living needs, that kind of vehicle?
Yeah, it's a van. It's a 3.5-ton van. So, yeah, we need to use it. So,
you've just been listening to what other governments are doing. They're reducing their tax take, or they're freezing it, or they're doing other measures. How disappointed are you that they're not doing more here? Or do you buy the line that there is that freeze that's in place until September? Luke?
I don't buy it at all, I'm afraid. Not anymore. Like, I did vote for Labour. I've given them the benefit of the doubt, but unfortunately, they're just taking the right nick out of everyone now. Like, with these, was it 56 or 58p for the tax on the fuel? They need to cut it.
Yeah, I think you meant percent is what you meant. Yeah, it's 58%. More than half, well over half, actually. Every time you put a litre of fuel or diesel or unleaded, they take. Luke, safe driving. Good luck with the work you do. Thanks for your input. Martin in Slough. Martin, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing?
Well, I'm all right, because I don't use... I really just use a vehicle for pleasure, to be honest with you. I don't need it like Luke did. And tell me, do you need your vehicle?
Yeah, I drive a tipper truck, eight-wheeler tipper truck.
Oh, my God.
So I'm delivering sand and gravel all over the south of England.
Right.
Fuel, for me, has gone up by about £400 a week.
How big is your tank, as it were?
About 250 litres.
Prior to the conflict, roughly what would you pay to fill her up or to put 100 litres in or whatever?
To fill her up, I'm putting in, I'd be putting in 150-ish litres a day, maybe a small bit more. So I'd class it as 900 litres a week, and that was costing me, ex-VAT now, this is, you know, £972 a week.
Now, that's
costing me about £1,340.
I mean, how long can this go on?
You tell me.
Can you pass the costs on to your customers?
I'm lucky. I'm sort of protected by a fuel escalator, but that still doesn't, you know, you're still worse off because, you know, it doesn't, you know, cover the full cost, but you know, but it's murder.
We just heard from someone in Fair Fuel UK, there were rumblings of lorry drivers being prepared to come into London. They did it over 20 years ago. You've got, as you say, a tipper truck. Would it be something that you would take part in some form of demo, Martin?
I'm not sure, because I'm close to people in Ireland, and I see how the fuel protests have gone down over there. So a lot of people are behind them initially, but it's like anything. Once you start and people get, say someone misses a hospital appointment,
yep.
someone gets held up in traffic,
yep.
heaven forbid something worse happens, then yep. you lose all support that way. You know.
Lastly, the farmers, they came to town earlier this year, and indeed last year for that matter. Did you respect the farmers for what they did, or again, did you say, listen, if you stop someone getting to a hospital for an emergency, that's going to blow up in your faces? Martin?
I think the way the farmers did it, in the way that they sort of just blocked Whitehall, brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, there was, you know, if you're just blocking Whitehall or Parliament Square, I don't think that's massive, really. But if you start doing slow along motorways or, you know, arterial routes, then that's a bigger problem.
Safe driving to you. Thank you for that. Good luck with your tipping work. This comes in from William. I live in Suffolk. I drive a transit van to deliver parcels, usually have to fill up every 4 days. It was costing £90. Now it's more than £130. Oy, oy, oy. Brian Short, first-time contributor. I run a limited company. I have to travel to various places. When will the government review the mileage rates? It's been 45p per mile for as long as I can remember. That's an interesting point, because there's no way, if you then allow for insurance and wear and tear and tyres and goodness knows what else that rate is meant to allow for, there's no way that it's covering that. If we're talking money and the weekend is around, we're not going out to see one of the sights.
Let's go Soho, Big Show, Fish Potter, Harry Potter, whole lot. Why not? Just gotta Let's Do London.
Let's Do London. That's an advert for Visit London, but this is as revealed. Families on benefits are being given access to London attractions for £1, while those working pay just under £100. It's reported ministers have reacted with fury to this loophole, which rewards those who are out of work or on long-term sickness benefit with cheap access. One MP saying the system has created, and I quote, a two-tier system that punishes work. Here's an example for you. Entry to Buckingham Palace, family of four, £99. But those on UC, Universal Credit, can claim up to 6 £1 tickets per household. More than 80 attractions give similar discounts. Should they? Rachel Harris is a business finance influencer, financial columnist at Stylist magazine, and founder of Accountant She, one of the UK's fastest growing modern accounting firms, and joins me now. Rachel, fair or otherwise in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I think an important point to note is, as part of my intro, obviously you said I own a portfolio of like seven-figure businesses, but I was also a free school meal child.
Okay.
And I think when we're looking at these stories, I don't think people are angry that the support exists. I was one of the children that benefited from that. I think the issue is that working people don't feel like they are getting ahead anymore.
Mm.
I don't think, you know, we need both. We need a support that works, and we need a system where work works as well.
How would that happen? How would that be brought about?
Yeah, and it's really hard, because what I'm seeing right now is people doing everything right. You know, our entire portfolio is 700 independent grassroots British business owners who are working incredibly hard, building businesses, raising families, and we feel stuck. We've seen business owners who pay significant taxes and employing people, and you can see it from both sides. I think as we zoom out and we look at it economically, we're going to need a response from Labour on this.
You're a person who clearly knows her numbers. When I hear or see or read that in some instances, families where they're just above a certain line, it would actually pay them not to go to work because UC and other benefits would kick in. I turn to you. Is that true or is that false in your take?
There are absolutely thresholds. I think there's two key thresholds that we see in the UK where people almost disengage. And I think a really important point here is that if people feel that the system isn't fair, they will disengage with it. And that's when we start to see bigger problems around what is the incentive to work. The two key points that we have in the UK is firstly to work or be in benefits at the lower income end of the spectrum. The second is where we see households strategically try and stay beneath the £100,000 income route, because again, then we're seeing extractions of childcare support as well. And so at the lower income end of the spectrum, if people fundamentally feel that the system is not fair, they will disengage with it. And that's where we see large problems around trust, tax participation, and we've got a whole world of pain coming.
Lastly, Rachel, to those who say that the social security system was meant to be a safety net, not effectively a lifestyle, how fair a criticism is that in your view?
Yeah, and again, I balance this as someone who was a free school meal child.
Absolutely, yep, I hear that, yep.
And I really cite a lot of the opportunities that I've been able to build because of the buffer that built for my family as a child. I think we need to protect the support for the people who need it, but we also need to make sure that as a country, we make sure that work pays off and it pays again. And I think right now, most people would agree that that balance feels off.
Thanks for your time, Rachel. Rachel Harris, financial columnist at Stylist Magazine, founder of Accountant She and Business Finance Influence. Doesn't seem fair, does it, that you get discounted? And if you were just above the just above that threshold that Rachel was explaining there, and you fancy taking, and you should, if you've got a, it is great. And I didn't do badly. I probably should have taken the children to more museums and exhibitions than I did. But I didn't. I don't think I did badly in all of that. I'm not going to lie. But suddenly finding a £111 to go around the Tower of London, which is a fantastic day out. I'm not knocking that. It is great. And the history and just fun as well for the kids to go around. It's fantastic. But £111 is a lot to find, isn't it? We'll continue. I might come up. But let's continue our conversation now. Ah, Brian in Norfolk. I think I was just reading a note from you about the rate per mile. Just explain to the listeners the relevance of that, if you would. Good to have you on. Morning, Brian.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Long time listener, first time caller.
Fantastic to have you on. Explain why you told me about that rate per mile and exactly what it means for my listeners and possibly for you.
Well, so I run a small limited company, do a lot of mileage for work, backwards and forwards. I don't have a company car, so I use my own car, and I claim back a mileage rate from the government, which is at 45 pence per mile.
Right.
Now, that rate hasn't changed for many, many years, for as long as I can remember, really. And, you know, with the fuel prices now being the way they are, I just wonder if there's any push from the government to try and look at that to help small business owners like myself.
Well, what do you think, sport? And I'm going to tell you now, the answer is no. I mean, they are battening down the hatches all they can. Do you have to do a lot of miles or average mileage? What would you say, Brian?
I'd probably do around 300 miles a week, really. I try and use public transport where I can, but, you know, being from Norfolk, it's not always that easy.
No. I was going to say, I mean, it's a beautiful county, but it's going to need a lot of travelling, isn't it, I would imagine, to get across the county to get elsewhere.
Absolutely, and even to get within Norfolk, you know, it's a car, it's an essential, it's not a luxury. I have an older car, but, the mileage rates need looking at, I think, now.
Okay, lastly, should the... As I hear what you say about mileage rate, but the idea of perhaps, remember, every time you put a litre in, more than half of it goes to the government. They need to freeze something, don't they, until this conflict's over, surely, Brian?
Absolutely. They need to help the small businesses as well. We have a place in this country, in this world. I work in offshore wind, funnily enough.
Okay. You can't put that in your tank, though, sport.
We can't, no, exactly. Like, and I can't put a wind turbine on the roof of the car, like. But we do need some help with the petrol, like.
Safe driving. Thanks for that, Brian. We'll have more calls on that. Coming up after the news, it's hurtling back at speeds of up to 25,000 miles an hour. It weighs just over 10 tonnes, and it's the furthest that any operation, any rocket has ever gone, or any space mission has ever gone from the planet. But remember the last time one went that far, it didn't have such a smooth return.
This could be the worst disaster NASA's ever experienced.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Great moment there. Very tense moment. Hey, back of my neck still comes up. That Apollo 13, Tom Hanks and Ed Harris, of course, star in that movie. Artemis 2 is coming down with those heat plates guarding just inches from 2,760 degree centigrade furnace. An inch or so of steel. Wishing it nothing but good luck. We'll have more on that. Remember, Artemis 1, which was unmanned, I repeat, unmanned, didn't go so well. We'll give you more on that after this. It's 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News then, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says Keir Starmer has spoken with President Trump about the need for a practical plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The conversation comes after Keir used an interview to criticise Mr. Trump, saying that he's fed up with rising bills caused by the Iran war. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. The US First Lady has been accused accused of diverting attention away from those with questions still to answer about their role in exposing Epstein's crimes. And a defence minister has insisted to Nick this morning the UK has a strong naval presence to deter spy missions by Russia. Yesterday it was revealed that Moscow had recently sent three submarines to record critical underwater cables in the North Atlantic. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain moving in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Why has the Iran-US ceasefire apparently come to an end before it even really began? Is Israel behind it all?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
There comes a time in your life when you need to make a change, to start a new chapter. It's time to consider a residential park home bungalow from Ecos Group. Castleview Court in Pevensey is a peaceful gated community for those aged over 45, set in a stunning location close to all local amenities. You can enjoy a stress-free move with up to 100% part exchange on your existing property with free site fees for your first year. Make that lifestyle change today and join us at our open weekend on the 25th and 26th of April at Castleview Court, Pevensey Bay, Pevensey. Or visit ecosgroup.co.uk. That's ecosgroup.co.uk.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas and Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
It's happened again. All you said was barrel leg. Now she's looking at you like Nadine isn't your real name. Look at you go, as you explain volume cocoon is a key shape for the season. 100% cotton, you say? No way, she says. And then, oh, a little extension of the trouser leg. Check out that pleat. Then you break the news.
They're from Primark. Only £16.
Be a good friend.
You can borrow them.
Hopefully she'll forget that. Shockingly chic for £16. That's so Primark. Available in-store and on click and collect.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:35. Just picking up what we were hearing from Brian in Norfolk. Ian in Burnley comes in. Just to let your caller know, the mileage allowance is 45p for the first 10,000 miles, then 25p for mileage above that. So, in a sense, that's because just because you've done 10,000 miles, it doesn't mean there's less wear and tear on your tyres or whatever else it might be. Ian, thank you for bringing me in on that. Let's talk about that. What I think is a terrible move to have families on benefits to pay £1 when families in work would pay £100. Cheryl's in Watford. Cheryl, you're on the radio. What do you say to that? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Hi. Lovely to speak to you.
Good to have you on.
I've got butterflies. I'm so nervous.
Oh, don't be so ridiculous. There's nothing to be nervous about.
I listen to you every morning.
Oh, Cheryl.
If you're not on, I sulk. So I'm really excited to talk to you.
So did you have an angry Easter then? Were you sulking all through Easter?
I do. I don't put it on if you're not there. I just love listening to you so much.
Oh, bless you. You're so sweet, Cheryl. Thank you. Next time I'm in Watford, I'll come and find you.
Yes. yes, I don't agree with all this, because if you work, it doesn't mean you're well off.
No.
I mean, you know, £100 to go to see Buckingham Palace, I'm sure it's lovely, but the time you get the food and the drink and, you know, the kids don't want to just go there and come home. They want to...
Well, let's talk, I mean, before you even get there, you've got the rail fares or the petrol or whatever you've got to get them there. Then, as you rightly say, you've got the entry. Now, I haven't done Buckingham Palace, but I did do the Tower of London. That comes in at £100 and something.
Oh, I've got it mixed up then, yeah.
Yeah, and that is a great day out. But you're right, then, obviously the children, possibly there's a programme or a brochure that you've got to get. Then they're all going to want, you know, in the museum, the gift shop afterwards, they're going to want a key ring or a t-shirt or a pen or something like that. Then they're also going to want a hamburger and they're going to want soft drinks. It adds up.
It does. It's terrible. And it's not only that. The government do, if you're on benefit, they will try to make your home warmer. But if you're working again, you don't get a look in. It doesn't mean you work. You're well off. You're just, you know, you can just make ends meet sometimes. It makes me very frustrated. My children have grown up now, but I have grandchildren.
Yes.
And I want to take them out, and it's terrible, the cost of anything. I was lucky, my kids are in their 30s now. Back when you took them out, things weren't as bad, I don't think. But now, you just can't take children anywhere.
And lastly, I don't know whether you agree with this, a lot of people say that the benefits, the social security, was meant as a safety net, not a lifestyle. And that is what, for some people, that is what it's become.
It is. There's no incentive to go to work, but there's every incentive just to stay at home.
agree with you. Look after those grandchildren. Lovely talking with you. Cheryl, I'll be on next week. You don't need to sulk next week, OK? I'll think of you Monday when I settle in and I think of young Cheryl up there in Watford waiting for me to give everyone the benefit of my views on life. All right, thanks, Cheryl. Two other matters and, well, history in the making. Tomorrow morning, I'm sure there will be a safe splashdown as the Orion crew climb into a capsule. Just give you an idea of the size of that the background is. They will be travelling at around 25,000 miles an hour in a capsule with a diameter of 5 metres, which is 16 and a half foot, and a height of 3.5 metres, or 11 foot. As somebody very accurate, but effectively 4 people cramming into the back of a transit van. Oh, outside them, by the way, there will be a furnace of 2,760 degrees centigrade, and just the heat plates to protect them. Now, those brave astronauts have gone the farthest ever from this planet. They've beaten those involved in Apollo 13.
Parachute situation, the heat shield, the angle of trajectory, and the typhoon. There's just so many variables, I'm a little
lost. I know
what
the problems are, Henry. This could be the worst disaster NASA's ever experienced.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And then if you could give your oxygen tanks a stir.
What did you do?
Nothing. I stirred the tanks.
Whoa.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
Our mission was called a successful failure in that we returned safely but never made it to the moon. I sometimes catch myself looking up at the moon, remembering the changes of fortune in our long voyage, thinking of the thousands of people who worked to bring the three of us home. I look up at the moon and wonder, when will we be going back? And who will that be?
Well, Tom, we seem to have the answer for you there. And if you fail to be moved by that film, you must have a heart of stone, Apollo 13. Let's turn to Libby Jackson, head of space at the Science Museum, one of the nation's leading experts on human spaceflight. Also was head of space exploration at the UK Space Agency as recently as 2024. So an expert indeed. Good to have you on, Libby. Just explain what will happen in the early hours of tomorrow morning our time. What happens as that capsule comes back into our system, as it were?
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Nick. It is the most critical part of this mission other than launch. And the astronauts will be, first of all, they'll get their spacecraft configured. They'll get into their spacesuits. They'll make sure that everything's all okay. And then as they are accelerating even now towards the Earth, and they slam into the Earth's atmosphere at around 24,000 miles an hour. At that point, they slam into the atmosphere. The atmosphere compresses, it heats up, and as you said, it makes their spacecraft heat up to around 2,700 degrees Celsius, protected by the heat shield. They will be in a communications blackout. Whilst that plasma is really hot, it stops the radio waves getting through, and that will last for about 6 minutes. And they will be experiencing G-forces of up to 3.9 G. That's four times the force of gravity as we feel it here. As they come out of that blackout through that major deceleration, the parachutes pop out when they're about 6 kilometres above the surface of the Earth, and then they will slowly drift down and land in the Pacific Ocean at about a 20 mile an hour plop.
Fantastic. Now here's some questions. Those heat shields, how thick are they? How many are there? And was there a problem with Artemis 1, which was unmanned, I remind the listeners?
Yeah, the material that they are made out of is called Avcoat, which is the same material that is on the Apollo spacecraft. And you can see it in the Apollo 10 capsule that's in the Science Museum. If you want to go and have a look, it's amazing. But they've changed it and made it into tiles like we had on the space shuttle. And as you say, on Artemis 1, this was the uncrewed test flight, the first time that the spacecraft flew without any humans on board. When it came back after its re-entry, the engineers looked at the heat shield and they were surprised by how much charring had taken place. It was more damaged than they expected. They'd run all the testing, they'd done all the sort of engineering analysis, and they weren't expecting it. Now, it's important to say that had there have been astronauts on that spacecraft, they would have got back okay. It was not so bad that it would have killed the crew, but it was still more risky than they might have liked. NASA have done all their homework, they've done all the more testing, and they are happy they're using the same heat shield, but they have changed the re-entry. On Artemis 1, they came into the atmosphere twice. They skipped off it, first of all, like a skimming stone, when you mm-hmm. use a stone on the pond, and then went back up and came down for a second time. And this time, they are just entering the atmosphere straight through, which means there will be slightly more G-forces, but they won't have what happened. There was a build-up of hot gases in the heat shield between the different layers after they skipped out and went back down. So there's been a lot of work done on this. Everyone is really quite happy that it will be okay.
I saw you smiling as we played you that clip of Apollo 13. As I recall from that movie, Libby, the angle of entry was pretty crucial. Is that still the case? And if so, why?
Yes, it really is. They said in that movie, they had a great picture, a piece of the media explaining that I think if you had a basketball and an orange and they was about 6 feet apart, it That's would be right. no slimmer than a piece of paper. And you have to get that corridor right. If you come in too steeply, those entry forces get too strong, it's too much for the astronauts to take, and the spacecraft burns up. And if you get the angle too shallow and too wrong, you will then skip out the atmosphere, as Artemis 1 planned to do, and potentially not be able to make it back to Earth. But the trajectory of this spacecraft is really, really well calibrated. They've been adjusting it and so on. They did another engine burn yesterday. And so they are targeting it really precisely and really accurately. And there's no concerns that they will come in the wrong angle.
Once the parachutes are deployed, how long yes. to float down to the briny?
The parachutes get deployed at 8:03, and we are expecting them to land around 8:07, so about 4 minutes.
Are you going to stay up late?
Oh, of course. I should say the 8:00 times
is local, is Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, so it's 0100 hours here.
Exactly, and absolutely I'm going to be staying up and watching this live on the NASA feed.
Libby, lastly, tell my listeners, what could they see at the Science Museum again that's relevant to our conversation?
You can come to the Science Museum and see Apollo 10, the real spacecraft. People say, surely it's a replica. It's the real spacecraft that flew around the moon. There is a moon rock, actual moon rock that's been brought back. We have Neil Armstrong's headset. And you can also go to the Science and Industry Museum in Manchester. We've got an amazing exhibition there where you can experience a moonquake and learn all about the planets in the solar system as well.
Libby, you're good at marketing as well. You've got the whole skill set there. Libby Jackson, head of space at the Science Museum, one of the UK's leading experts in human spaceflight, and was head of space exploration at the Space Agency in the UK as recently as 2024. So they can do all of that. Meanwhile, here in London, the Hammersmith Bridge remains closed after 7 years. I mean, it is extraordinary, isn't it? And we're going to be talking ticket prices with you. Coming up after the news, they're off.
Tony McCoy, the winning most National Hunt rider of all time, has waited a long time to land his first Grand National. First all round, Tony McCoy.
The horse was Don't Push It. I'm pushing my luck because it would be a privilege to speak to Tony or AP, or now Sir AP McCoy, after this. 8:45, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer has spoken with President Trump about the need for a practical plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her surprise White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. And a defence minister has insisted to Nick the UK has a strong naval presence to deter spy missions by Russia. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and 4 at Orpington. It's because of the emergency works which are taking place after a fuel spillage, and there are delays on the approach. Very busy on the A1M northbound to junction 4 at the A414, and that's because a car's broken down. Still restrictions on the A1 northbound in Mill Hill at the fairway, and that's also after an accident. On the trains, well, the Mildmay line is still suffering with minor delays between Stratford and Clapham junction, and also between Stratford and Richmond. It was after a signal failure that happened earlier. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Piccadilly, the Metropolitan and the District line.
This is LBC.
Co-op members now get prices matched to Aldi. Hold on, no way. Okay then, so co-op members now get everyday essentials price matched to Aldi. Sign up and start saving. Co-op, owned by you, right by you. I wasn't expecting that.
Co-op member prices matched versus comparable selected products at Audi GB. Co-op membership required. Co-op group food stores only. See co-op.co.uk/Audi price match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
With a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The benefits of being on benefits? Well, if you wanted out in London, there would seem to be. 8:49, and you'll be the next caller on that. Jagdeep says, I took my two daughters for go-karting. Everything, including food, cost £220, and it was for 45 minutes. Glenn says, it actually does not pay to graft all your life and pay taxes. Mark O'Mara, not only are working people paying the bills of people not working, we're now paying for them to go out on day trips. But Bob in Leeds, sorry, is the issue of people on benefits getting benefits? Should we sit at home with the kids all through the summer and Easter holidays? You're a numpty, says Bob in Leeds. All I would say is the social security system was meant to be a safety net, not a lifestyle. Anne's in Sutton. Anne, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick.
Hello, Anne.
Hi. I'm just so frustrated that when people talk about people on benefits getting things, it's not the point, the very important point is not made.
Right.
That a large number of people on universal credit actually do work, and they work very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very hard to live on universal credit top up with your work.
Okay.
Should those who are
just above a threshold, should they be subsidising other people so they can go around the Tower of London for a pound?
I actually don't see that threshold working. I have limited knowledge, I grant.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is on universal credit,
right.
And has been for many years. She works very hard as a healthcare assistant.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that the more work she's able to do, her actual income increases. It benefits her to work overtime, and she does.
Right.
Because universal credit take off your benefit 45 pence in every pound that you earn. So if you earn an extra pound, you actually benefit by 55 pence.
I see. There is no metric or measure for this, lastly, Anne, but how tough is it then for your daughter with the equation, the sums you've just spelt out for us, Anne?
Very tough.
Is it?
Very, very tough. It's, I mean, one of the main benefits of being on universal credit is that it's a measured benefit, but you get help with your rent. And because the rents are so ridiculously high, I'm not having a go at landlords, I understand they have to be, mm-hmm. but that does help with the rent. But to live on just the universal credit plus your salary is not easy at all. And the children, yeah. my grandchildren, don't get to do anything, really. If they go out for a day, it will be because we take them.
I hear what you're saying, and thank you. I have to finish there. Best wishes to your daughter and to your grandchildren as she brings those kiddies up, and I'm sure you relish being a grandparent, and thank you. 8:53. Now let's go to a big event on the calendar tomorrow, sporting calendar in this country. And I say again, and I appreciate many of you haven't, and it's very, very tough at the moment financially, but for a few of you, you are going to have a flatter on the big race.
Tony McCoy, the winning most National Hunt rider of all time, has waited a long time to land his first John Smith's Grand National. First all round, Tony McCoy, JP McManus, John Joe O'Neill, Don't Push It won the National.
2010, AP then, AP McCoy, now Sir AP McCoy, winning in the Grand National. AP joins me now. Privileged to have you on, Governor. How difficult is it, having competed in it, having won it, to actually just have to watch it now? Good morning.
Good morning. It's very different. I mean, I'm from a non-racing family. I have four sisters and one brother, and they've never ridden horse before. So the first race or horse race that I ever knew about was the Grand National. I remember my grandmother back in Last Suspect at 50-1 in 1985. So from a family like that, the Grand National is such a big thing. So as a kid growing up, to watching it, to being able to compete in it, and having failed 14 times before I actually did win it, was amazing. And it doesn't have the same thrill now as it did when I was riding, but I still look forward to it, and it's a great day out. And Liverpool is such an amazing place, and it's a place that the people of, it's a race that the people of Liverpool are so proud of, and so they should be, because it is the biggest horse race in the world. Everyone watches it. So I'm looking forward to it. And the race has changed a lot as a horse race, but it's still a very, very good race. It's a very, very good horse race, and really, really good horses.
It's a good race, AP, but you need some guts, don't you? I've only ever watched it. You've got to be pretty, pardon my language, ballsy to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a little different. It's a little different. The challenge is different now than it was, when I started in 1995, sorry. the challenge is different. But it's still a challenge, and it's still, 4.5 miles, and it's, the level of intensity, like all high end elite sport, it's meant to be. Elite sport is tough on every level. So, and it is for the horse, and it it's a fascinating race again. I look forward to it. You've got Ian Maximus, who was second last year.
Yep.
Won it the year before. I mean, he will be a lot of people's, because of his name, and but he is actually a very good horse, and he's a very good Grand National horse, and he was second last year.
AP, but William Hill have done some research which features in today's Daily Express, and they warn once in a year punters should avoid backing national horses with human sounding names. Only 3 of the last 98 of them have won, and of course Max in Maximus. So I know it's all down to luck. Go on, AP.
Yeah, one of them was Ian Maximus, though, and it sounds good, doesn't it? It's that gladiator effect,
yes.
for people who might be into that kind of thing for the Grand National that might pick up that reason. But he is a very good horse. William Hiller, obviously, they put up a bonus for a horse that won the Beecher Chase Twig. And if he wins, he's going to get an extra £500,000. So he'll be a big, he'll be a big loser for the likes of William Hill. But I like Ian Maximus. Look, Willie Mullins is a very strong hand. He is the most successful trainer at the moment. He's got Grange Clare West, who runs in it as well. But I do like Ian Maximus. He'll be the one that I'll be sticking with.
Lastly, as often comes round before the National, there are people saying that it's cruelty, it should be banned, horse racing should not be allowed. My take on this is that these horses have the most supreme lifestyles, probably better healthcare than I have, and they're bred for it. Your view, AP.
Yeah, I have a girl who trains horses in my yard at home, and I notice whenever something, whenever they might need a care, you get a vet within 10 minutes. You go and sit in A&E. I actually had pneumonia in January, and went and I sat in A&E for like 6 hours. Absolutely. And I actually, all I kept thinking about was, I wish I was a horse. I know anyone ever should never think about that, but they get phenomenal care. Look, the way life is going and the way society is going, people won't want you doing anything. You know, they won't have anyone working before long. You know, so I'm not. Because I'm a huge horse racing fan, as I'm not from a horse racing family, I see the care. I don't feel that I need to justify it. You only got to go and look there and hang out with them. Yeah. People that, like, you know, horses are so well cared for. It's such a great life. Yeah. As I said to you, that's all I thought about was I was in A&E for 6 hours, and two weeks later, I remember one of the girls in the yard, something happened, one of the horses, and the vet was there in 10 minutes. And I remember thinking,
that's my God.
That's the reality of life. But as I said to you, society is very different now, and we have to be careful because we end up doing nothing if we're not careful.
AP, you know, you just saying, "I wish I was a horse." That's going to be clipped by your colleagues at ITV. They're going to run that tomorrow with you saying you wish you were a horse.
Yeah, why not? You can create life, isn't it?
Huh? Thanks for your time. Have a good meeting. Good luck to you. Thanks, AP. Sir AP McCoy, 20-time champion jockey, national winner, part of the ITV team tomorrow. I wish I was a horse. We might come back to that conversation. But let's, one last call on energy prices. Philip in Harrow, thank you for holding. So, Philip, what do you think the government should be doing? Are they doing enough? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I don't normally, well, I do. I have sent several text messages in relating to this problem.
Yeah.
I personally feel that the energy companies are profiteering. The moment the Trump war started, and it is a Trump war.
Israel are in as well, in fairness, but yeah, go on.
You like Israel.
I love Israel.
But we won't go into that because I need to go back to work very quickly.
Oh, okay.
I work for the NHS. So,
right, okay. So what should the government do, lastly, sir?
Well, I think they should bring down the... I think they should be curbing the prices because the prices went up. On day one, the prices went up. I have a local garage next to my hospital, and it's £2 a litre, and that's been £2 a litre for the last 3 weeks. And it's actually gone beyond £2 a litre because I've tried past it.
Mm. And it's a lot of money. I will let you get back, and thank you for coming away from your shift and whatever you do in the hospital. Grateful to you. Thank you, Philip, and thanks for your input on that. But the music means we must move on, and we move on by looking at tragic events in the English Channel.
4 UK-bound migrants drowned in the English Channel as French police looked on. I'm Peter Allen, reporting for LBC in Paris.
And from Paris to London, where the mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan, says or calls for us to stop portraying the city as crime-ridden. He says that ministers and indeed our ambassadors should be doing more overseas, but if you work or live or work and live in London, how do you see the city? And we will come back to that conversation. I wish I was a horse, says AP, with the idea that horse racing actually is banned on the eve, of course, of the Grand National. 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Downing Street says that Keir Starmer has spoken with President Trump about the need for a practical plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Separately, Sir Keir has criticised Mr Trump, saying that he's fed up with rising bills caused by the Iran conflict. The Conservatives have accused ministers of using the war as an excuse. The chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Dame Emily Thornberry, has told Nick this morning critics need to back the UK's energy security strategy.
It shows us yet again we have to have a variety of sources of energy, but the most important one is renewables, and we must continue to push on with that. And those that are getting in the way of renewables in their local areas really have to think again about what is in the national interest, because we can and we must depend on ourselves when it comes to energy.
Israel and Hezbollah have exchanged fire in Lebanon overnight, increasing tensions further ahead of planned peace talks in Pakistan tomorrow. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised the US First Lady following her surprise White House address last night denying ties to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Melania Trump has been accused of diverting attention away from those with questions still to answer about their role in exposing Epstein's crimes.
A defence minister has insisted to LBC the UK has a strong naval presence able to deter spy missions by Russia. Yesterday it was revealed that Moscow had sent three submarines to spy on underwater cables in the North Atlantic. Officials say there's no evidence of any damage to UK infrastructure. Minister for Defence Readiness Luke Pollard has told Nick the UK is successfully disrupting Russian surveillance missions.
We always keep a Royal Navy ship on constant watch, so HMS Somerset and HMS Mersey, for instance, have been involved in some of the tracking activity, but it's precisely because our actions against Russia's shadow fleet is working that we're now seeing Putin having to escort his shadow fleet with Russian frigates, taking the long way around the United Kingdom, adding extra time and cost to the Russian shadow fleet operation.
Separately, Russia has announced a ceasefire in Ukraine for Orthodox Easter this weekend. President Zelensky says Ukraine had already proposed the idea and will act accordingly. It'll come into effect from tomorrow afternoon and last 32 hours. And there's to be an increase in the number of specialist police officers on the streets to protect Jewish and other faith communities. The Home Office says both anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hate crime have recently reached record levels. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 at £10,624. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK through Friday. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say nature ists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after nine on Friday, April the 10th. Coming up in this hour as the nation braces for a bumper summer of channel crossings after France snubbed our proposals for boats to be sent back to France. Four people, at least four, it's feared the number could grow by the way, four people die off the French coast. Why won't they, the French, allow us, Britain, to get more involved? In other news, speaking at a disinformation summit in Cambridge yesterday evening, London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan called on social media companies and others to stop portraying London as a crime-ridden and failing city. If you live and work, or live and work in London, how do you regard the city? This was touched on by Met Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley with me in December.
This trend of trying to rubbish London, we need to sort of, we who are proud Londoners need to fight back about it, because there's lots to be proud of about London.
There is lots to be proud about London, not least the Londoners, but there's also, we have to be realistic, don't we, about crime in this city? I'll turn it over to you, Londoners, and of course others. Your view from outside London is equally as important later in the hour. And as one political party, the Greens, are saying it's time to ban horse racing, what's the view of some big figures in the industry, such as AP McCoy?
I actually had pneumonia in January and went and sat in A&E for like 6 hours. And like, actually, all I kept thinking about was, I wish I was a horse.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Before we get into the political biff and bat, and by the way, we are aware that Defence Secretary John Healey is speaking at the moment. We've got a reporter listening in, so if he says anything of great import, I'm not in any way being disobliging here. I think it is just a regular press conference. I don't sense there's any major announcement. I think he'll just elaborate on what we've heard, but don't worry, if he does say anything, we'll break in and tell you. So I think it's just an update, really, on where we find ourselves. So before we get into the political biff and bat over the problems of migrant crossings, let's just put one number out there, which is four. Four people, at least four actually, died off the French coast. And this comes as the request from the British government, Shabana Mahmood, who's probably one of the better ones, I would suggest, in this cabinet, has asked that we'd use Border Force patrols, or possibly even if we've got any, Royal Navy patrols, to try and curtail the number of small boat crossings. More on that and more on the tragedy that played out in the Channel. LBC's reporter in Paris, Peter Allen, joins me now. Morning, Peter.
Good morning, Nick.
It was around this time yesterday when some 80 people were standing on a beach just south of Boulogne-sur-Mer waiting for a so-called taxi boat. What these are boats organised by people smugglers that come up through inland waterways, canals and the like. They get onto the seafront at northern France and then they pick up the migrants. That's what's meant to happen. Of course, the big problem is that the police don't like to intervene when these boats are at sea. When they're actually on the shore, the police do intervene. So they lay off the shore. And yesterday, a lot of people were trying to get onto this boat, including two men and two women, two of whom were brother and sister, and they were swept away by the current and drowned. Others may have died as well. A search is continuing for bodies this morning. Terrible tragedy. And there was one in almost identical circumstances a week ago when two other people died very close to Dunkirk. Again, it was a taxi boat. Again, they were trying to get onto the taxi boat. And they failed and they drowned in the water. And in both cases, yes, people were rescued from the boat, but around 30 others continued on their way to England. Can you believe it? The French police allowed the boats to pick up and continue on their way despite these fatalities. This is going on and on. There's fury about this here in France, but not, I have to add, from the French government, which seems to be allowing it to carry on.
Peter, I was struck by the language used by, I think, the mayor of Calais or one of the Calais authorities, and they refer to it as a taxi boat. That tells us possibly everything we need to know. About the negotiations going on regarding Shabana Mahmood and the deployment of border force or royal naval vessels, I tried with Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper to get some more details yesterday. I got nowhere. Is anything coming out of French authorities or French channels on this?
Well, simply that they are saying that the demands by the British are unacceptable. For example, the British want to move into French territorial waters to help the French police intercept boats and bring them back to France. That is a red line for the French. It is unacceptable. And so we've got a temporary funding agreement at the moment. That's worth £16.5 million. That will last until the end of May. And of course, the fear is if a new deal isn't negotiated by the end of May, the 700 officers currently being used by the French on the beaches will withdraw. So getting sort of a crisis point in that respect. But of course, what more crisis could you have than people dying on this route every week now?
Lastly, the last time I spoke with Shabana Mahmood, there is, I understand, understandable concern by the gendarmes or the equivalent of the French border force that if they go out and start slashing these boats with knives or whatever it might be and someone drowns, that obviously will come back to that particular officer. Has that been addressed in any way?
It's not been addressed at all, except that the French police are saying they will not slash boats anymore. They will not go out to sea. They will intervene on inland waterways, but not when a boat is actually at sea, which is when the worst problems happen. And that is why the mayor of Calais, for example, this morning, Natasha Bouchard, has massively criticised the French government, and indeed the interior minister, Laurent Nunez, who's ultimately in charge of French police, saying that this is political failure and lacks policing, and something has to be done about it. She's blaming all this on French police.
Always good talking with you, Peter. Thank you, Peter Allen, LBC's reporter in Paris. Let's bring the conversation, Gitto Harry, who was former Downing Street Director of Communications with Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, joining me now. Well, we talk about political failure across the Channel in France. Do we see political failure here, Gitto? Morning to you.
Yes, they're getting absolutely nowhere with this. And what they did was remove the one scheme that, had it actually come to fruition, would have provided a massive disincentive for people to get into boats and to come to the UK. Because if you know that when you arrive at your destination, you're sent straight away to somewhere else, in the case of the scheme that was put in place under Boris Johnson, to Rwanda, then you don't get in the boat in France. That's one failure. But the other failure is the failure to be honest about what's going on. There is a very, very clear sort of principle in maritime law that means if somebody is rescued in the water, the obligation on whoever rescues them is to take them to the nearest port. So if these people were intercepted, and indeed in the case of so many of them, rescued in French waters, then the place to return them to is France. And there's a fundamental dishonesty about the debate.
Let me ask you this. Can I talk about the pull factor? This was something that Emmanuel Macron spoke of when he was last in the United Kingdom, suggesting that it does serve as a magnet, which leads to some of the problems that he's experiencing on the shores of the country that he runs. How fair is that, the so-called pull factor, Gitto?
I think he's, you know, he's a French charmer. He's very good at sort of deflecting, you know, the true nature of the problem. The problem is that these people are not fleeing a war zone. They maybe have done to get to France, but where they're trying to flee is northern France to come to the UK. So at that point, they are safe. And Emmanuel Macron is more than capable of stopping them from taking off. If you and I, you know, chartered a yacht and tried to get to France, you know, for a little mini booze cruise, the two of us, you can bet your cotton socks that we would be intercepted. Then there'd be no way we'd get to leave with a whole load of, you know, Chateauneuf-du-Pape to bring back to London. But if 80 people are on a beach, 9 times out of 10, they are not intercepted. 5,000 of them have managed to get out of France so far this year. This is in an age of drones. This is in an age of sort of very, very sophisticated technology that means you can spot an individual from outer space, and yet the French can't stop the boats leaving their own territorial waters. Really?
Lastly, let's touch on Rwanda, Gitto. You mentioned that. I don't know what the collective noun for lawyers are, a confusion or whatever it might be, but there would have been
an expense of lawyers.
There would have been an expense of lawyers lining up not to try and stop Rwanda actually happening. How confident are you that it would have actually got off the ground and it would have worked? Gitto.
It would have done in the end. Given time, I think it would have, we'd have ironed out those issues, and we'd have actually deprived all of Keir Starmer's friends from his previous, you know, profession of the millions and billions of pounds they made cashing in on this kind of misery. And if that had happened, I saw it happen in Italy when Berlusconi, years and years ago, made it clear that if you got to Lampedusa, you end up in Libya. Funny enough, people stopped coming to Lampedusa.
That's all you need to hear. Gitto, good weekend to you. Gitto Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications, serving under Boris Johnson as PM. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Josh in Waterlooville. I imagine you're not that necessarily surprised by the action of the French. So what needs to happen now? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Hello. What needs to happen now? I don't really know. All I know is that they don't want us in their waters to escort them back to France because they don't want the people.
I mean, that's so telling, isn't it? I say again, credit to Shabana Mahmood. She does appear very keen to get either border force or if we've got any Royal Naval vessels doing this action, and the French are just saying no. I think that tells us a lot, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And it's just one thing after another, isn't it? We're giving them money.
£16.5 million until the end of May. £475 million over the last few years.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, where's the money coming from?
Well,
you know,
it's our taxes sport. That's where it comes
from.
The
world is a real bad place at the minute, and I just think we've got to start trying to look after number one.
Josh, look after yourself this weekend. And the reality is, as the conflict plays out in Iran, more people, understandably, are going to want to leave that particular part of the world, and they're going to want to come to Europe, and probably many of them are going to want to come to the UK because, of course, how popular the English language is. And it would appear we have zero assistance. So much for the French connection. It's more French resistance, isn't it? We'll pick up on that. And also, if you live or work, or like me, live and work in London, how safe is it? This was addressed by London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, who told LBC last year,
according to international comparators, you're less likely to be victim of homicide in London than New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Paris, Madrid, Barcelona, Toronto or Berlin.
Now, we all know figures can lie. You can make them work for you whichever way. But does it actually feel like that in this city? You'll tell me after this. 9.15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer has spoken with President Trump about the need for a practical plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her surprise White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. And a defence minister has insisted to Nick the UK has a strong naval presence to deter spy missions by Russia. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is closed anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and 4 at Orpington. Some emergency works are taking place. In the city, Farringdon Lane is partially blocked westbound. It's because of some emergency works, so that's very busy. And one lane's closed on the A1 northbound at the fairway in Mill Hill, and that's following an accident that happened earlier this morning. On the trains, the Mildmay line is suffering with delays between Stratford and Clapham Junction, also up to Richmond after a track problem from earlier. Also, LNER, Great Northern and Thames Link services are delayed between Stevenage and Peterborough, and that's all down to a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £91 million. It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's draw. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is,
loss? I...
No, forget that.
Never just happens. Keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear.
Always.
You must advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wickes Kitchen Experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wickes.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Here's the fascinating thing. In Brussels, they're now talking about the idea of other countries going for these off-site, that's what it's called, off-site handling centres. Italy and France, in negotiations with countries such as Ghana, Tunisia and Egypt to provide that. Very much what Gito Harry was just saying, that when under the days of Berlusconi in Italy, they said, well, if you arrive at Lampedusa, you'll find yourself in Libya. Libya currently is not part of it. That has to be the solution. And I know you're going to say, oh, they spent hundreds of millions of pounds and no one went to Rwanda. Yes, all of the above is true, but we will always wonder about Rwanda because we will never know whether it could have worked. Yeah, offshore handling, they're calling it in Brussels, as if they've just come up with the idea. We'll take more on that in a moment. Paul, you'll be the next caller. But London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan was speaking at a disinformation summit in Cambridge last night. And the mayor warned that robust central government action seems increasingly necessary if social media companies continue to neglect the issue of accuracy on social media. We need a new central body with the agility and authority to protect our democracy from disinformation, he said. He also said that ministers and indeed ambassadors should be doing more to disabuse folk of the idea that London is a dangerous city. I'll ask you how you view London in just a moment. As you know, regrettably, the mayor refuses to speak to me and has done since his first election, which, not really a big problem for me, but I would love to be able to have him answer questions from you, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. But he did tell LBC in December...
Youth homicides last year were the lowest in more than 20 years. Burglaries are down. The numbers of young people injured with a knife are down. According to the ONS, and it's important to also quote national stats, according to the ONS, you're less likely to be the victim of violence in London than the rest of England and Wales.
Look, you can make numbers say pretty much anything you want, but we are talking about a city where, and I will tread carefully because there have been arrests, but three people have been fatally stabbed in the last week. A few weeks ago, ambulances were set alight. You have to be pretty brave to walk around parts of London now if you have a Rolex or an expensive watch. Someone was effectively beaten to death for his watch. And we're told we're in a safe city. And I don't really worry about being compared to Chicago or Berlin or Paris. I worry about what's happening in London as someone who lives and works in London and a family who live and work in London as well. Leila Cunningham is Reform UK's candidate for Mayor of London, also leads Reform on Westminster City Council. and joins me now. How safe is London in your view? Good morning, Councillor.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Listen, he likes to highlight the one thing that has gone down, and that's homicides, even though we've had three horrific ones in the past few days. But, Nick, I mean, listen, a rape is recorded every hour. Only 6% end up in a charge. You know, shoplifting has reached an all-time high. Theft, robbery, sexual offences. Knife crime has gone up by over 70% in the past decade. And what's really, you know, because he doesn't highlight every stabbing or he doesn't talk about every robbery, he's not worried about misinformation. He's worried that people can actually really see what's going on.
And what is really going on in your view, Councillor?
Well, what's really going on is that Londoners don't feel safe. And it really doesn't matter where you are. It's different types of crimes. But, you know, I was a senior crime prosecutor across London. And crime is rampant. You know, people don't feel safe. As I said, it's a rape epidemic, a knife crime epidemic, a robbery epidemic, a theft epidemic, a shoplifting epidemic. I speak to shopkeepers, Nick, who think that 999 are screening their calls because they call too much. That's what's going on in London. People are not relying on the police anymore. Of course, if it's a big dangerous crime, I spoke to a lady, a young girl who was raped, and she said that the police told her, "We will not investigate your rape because you happened to be smiling on the CCTV before you went up to his flat." I wrote to the Met and I said, "How dare you?" Almost, you know, obviously in more professional terms, not investigate this rape. And you know what they said?
No.
I've got the email. They said, "We cannot be sure that a judge or jury would convict." They are acting like judge or jury. As you and I know, that's a trial matter because rape cases often fall on how convincing either party is. But that's what's happening. That's why only 6% end up in a charge.
But you're closer to this than I am, Councillor. I thought it was down to the CPS, by the way, to decide whether or not we press charges, not down to the police.
So did I. But, you know, it's the CPS end up charging it. But a lot of times they don't send it to the CPS.
Let me ask you, what we're talking about the problem and we're talking about your position and your view of the mayor. What of the Met Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley? Is he in tune with that, or is he seen to be really effectively underscoring what the mayor is saying in your view?
Well, I think he's underscoring I feel he's become too political, right? So I mean, when I announced my candidacy, they came out with, you know, both of them articles all over the press saying that homicide is down. And yeah, thank God homicide's down. Number one, we have some of the best doctors preventing knife crime from ending up in a murder.
Well, I could argue that's because we have too much experience of it, Councillor.
Yeah, exactly. But also, you can't ignore a dead body, right? So you have to investigate it. I mean, murders have a 95% investigation rate. Other crimes don't. And he goes on and on about this one stat because he knows that every other stat is abysmal. And, you know, I'm not going to forget the grooming gangs where Mark Rowley and the city council didn't exist. We've seen numerous articles by the BBC and victims' reports that they do. And it's only under public pressure that they said actually we're reviewing, you know, thousands of cases. That is not good enough for the girls and it's not good enough for London.
Thanks for your time, Councillor. Leila Cunningham is Reform UK's candidate for Mayor of London, leader of Reform on Westminster City Council, and obviously, therefore, a councillor. Jerry, we'll talk to you about London in just a moment. Paul, though, I will come to you first on the migrant story, but you know, one thing I've forgotten to mention, of course, was I call them steaming, or the link-up gangs in Clapham over the Easter weekend, and I think the weekend before that, where I read that scores of young people, mostly young males, descended on this particular area, and hundreds of people, quite rightly, they locked the shop doors to keep families inside the shops while police arrived. But this is a safe city. I don't want to talk London down. I want as much money to come in London as I possibly can. I want it to be a great summer. I want the shops and the restaurants and the businesses to take lots of money. It's fantastic. Then they'll employ more people. Brilliant. But you've got to be realistic. And I don't know that it's right for the mayor to blame disinformation. Surely, again, you can make numbers say whatever you like, pretty much. Helps if you know how many ships you've got in the Navy. But you can make numbers say pretty much whatever you like. But the big one here is surely the reality of this city. Jerry, you're going to be on that. But Paul in Bromley. Paul, we've given France £16.5 million until the end of May. It appears we're getting nothing for the money. Would you have signed off on that? Good morning.
No way, Nick. I don't think we should give the French another penny, to be honest with you. I think it's a complete and utter waste of money.
Agree with you.
I was on Question Time a couple of weeks ago. when Wes Streeting was on there, when the meningitis...
You mean the BBC one, or do you mean
BBC
Ian?
The BBC one.
Oh, the BBC, right, oh, okay, right, okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I tried to get this better. Question across to him, but obviously they picked certain questions and mine wasn't picked.
Right.
But I'm worried about, you know, the vaccination uptake of a lot of these migrants. They get offered vaccines, and a lot of them, you know, don't have to have them, just turn them down. Why can't we just put into law that you can't enter this country without being proof of vaccination against all major illnesses?
Well, because you're obviously talking about this in light of the problem with the boat. I mean, bear in mind, it's almost certain that there will be people now leaving Iran to come through Europe in some of the most appalling conditions to arrive in Italy or to arrive in France, and they will seek to get to the coast. What added pressure might that bring, do you think, Paul?
I think the added pressure is on basically on healthcare and everybody else, you know, and the welfare.
Agree with you. Paul, thank you. We worked out the other day, it's nearly £300,000 a day we're giving to the French, and they do nothing, as we heard from my colleague Peter Allen in Paris. French police officers, border force officials, whatever, will not slash the boats with knives, because if someone drowns, ultimately they could go to jail. You can't really blame them. So why have we signed off on another 16 and a bit million pounds? I'll tell you more about that in a moment, but I want to get into the conversation concerning London. Now, Jerry's in Hereford. How often do you come to our city? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great show.
Good to have you on, sir. How's Hereford? Are the SAS behaving themselves? I trust they are.
Fantastic.
Good man. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what you've got to do, Nick, is just be sensible in life. You know, even in Hereford, you know, late at night, there's lads around the streets and that, which is fine. Just be sensible. Put your wallet in your front pocket. I'm going to London next weekend. I've been many, many times over the last few months, stayed in various hotels, gone to lovely plays. Mm-hmm. Never a problem.
Okay, that's interesting. Sorry, I thought you said, so you're very much where Sadiq is. You think it's a very safe town?
I think it's, for me, personally, I've never had a problem. Yes, there is problems. You see things on the news with these lads on bicycles doing all sorts of silly things. But from a person that's coming to London, you know, as a tourist, effectively, from Hereford, we never have a problem.
And lastly, when you tell your friends or family or whatever in Hereford, we're going up to London, we're going to go and see a show, do they say, whoa, be careful, or do they say, oh, yeah, great. What is the view of London outside of London, Jerry?
Well, for my friends, they say, lucky bugger, you're away for the weekend. Great, you know?
Enjoy. Yeah. Have a good trip the next time you come up. Again, it started with government ministers throwing language around. I better offer an apology. It's not the most offensive word in the world, but let's cover ourselves and say outdoor language or whatever I have to say. Jerry, safe travel next time you come up. We'll take your more views on that. Outsourcing is what they're calling it, by the way. I've been able to find something that I wrote a week or so ago for the Sunday Express. Hailed as an innovative solution, they're being bandying this around in Brussels. A number of nations says they want to be hosts. Tunisia, Ghana are ready to sign up. Kenya, Benin, Uganda and Mauritania are wanting to sign up. And already Italy, France and Austria and Spain are saying, we'd like to have a look at this. We called it Rwanda. And one of the first things this government did when they crossed the threshold was, that's right, to close it down. Where is the sense in that? We'll continue that conversation. Also, coming up after the news, the move by a senior politician, leader of the Green Party, and they're enjoying an upsurge, he wants to ban horse racing. This comes out the day of the big race, the Grand National. So let's get the view of a former national winner, AP McCoy.
I actually had pneumonia in January and went and sat in A&E for like 6 hours. All I kept thinking about was, I wish I was a horse.
Who wouldn't? I've often wished I was a horse. The safety, or otherwise, of horse racing after this. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has spoken with Donald Trump about establishing a practical plan for getting ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz. The call comes as concerns increase that the ceasefire between Iran and the US is faltering due to Israel's attacks on Lebanon. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her surprise White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. The US First Lady has been accused of diverting attention away from those with questions still to answer about their role in exposing Epstein's crimes. And a defence minister has insisted to Nick this morning the UK has a strong naval presence to deter spy missions by Russia. Yesterday it was revealed Moscow had recently sent 3 submarines to record critical underwater cables in the North Atlantic.
LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain will move in from the west by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BitVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out, they've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing, and then there's the bet builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Rednap. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I've got to be honest with you, I probably only do it about six times a year. My wife encourages me to do it. She thinks it's a very good idea. But I'm very careful how I do it. I'm talking about placing bets. Tomorrow's the big one, the Grand National. I will definitely walk down to the bookies. I won't know which one, name which one. But if you are going to bookies, try and make sure you get a one where they pay up to five on the Grand National. You at least pay up to five. You get a bit further in a way. And, I was going to say you've got to have a flutter. You don't have to have a flutter. And I appreciate I'm very fortunate. And you should only bet what you can say you're prepared to lose, because in many instances you don't see a lot of poor bookies. But it is surely a great industry, isn't it? Well, now there are moves by a leading politician, the leader of the Green Party, to say that it and actually all sport of any sort involving any animals, including equestrian events at the Olympics, should all be banned. We'll come to the Olympic aspect in just a second. But in the previous hour, if you were listening, I was privileged to speak to A.P. McCoy, or indeed Sir A.P. McCoy, legendary jockey, Grand National winner. And I asked him about this often-heard criticism of the dangers, the reality of horse racing by anti-racing campaigners.
I have a girl who trains horse in my yard at home, and I notice whenever something, you know, whenever they might need a care, you get a vet within 10 minutes. You go and sit in A&E. I actually had pneumonia in January and went and I sat in A&E for like 6 hours. Sorry. And like, all I kept thinking about was, I wish I was a horse. I know anyone ever should never think about that, but they get phenomenal care. Look, the way life is going and the way society is going, people won't want you doing anything. You know, they won't have anyone working before long, you know, so I'm not, because I'm a huge horse racing fan, and say I'm not from a horse racing family, I see the care. I don't feel that I need to justify it. You only got to go and look there and hang out with them. Yeah. People that, like, you know, horses are so well cared for. It's such a great life. Yeah. I, as I said to you, that's all I thought about was I was in A&E for 6 hours, and two weeks later, I remember one of the girls in the yard, something happened to one of the horses, and the vet was there in 10 minutes. And I remember thinking,
"That's
oh my God, that's the reality of life." But as I said to you, society is very different now, and we have to be careful, because we end up doing nothing if we're not careful.
A.P. McCoy's desire to be a horse, but is that the reality? It's, as I say, Zach Polanski posted, let's go further, remove all animals involved in sport, which would, as I say, involve the Olympics equestrian events as well. Saffron Gloin is an animal rights activist, an animal rescue campaigner, joins me now. Your view of horse racing. Thank you for coming on the show. Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Your view?
My view. Put it in the bin.
Why?
So many reasons, but I think the core of it is that we are abusing, using, exploiting animals for entertainment and to make a few people a lot of money. And that's the bottom line, really. I did have a listen to what your previous guest was saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I agree to an extent. They are treated very, very well until they're not. And it's when they're not that it all goes downhill very, very quickly. And they face an end of their life that they shouldn't, because they are no longer available to make money.
But you'll be aware there are what I think are called homes for retired racehorses up and down the land, where they see out their days grazing on a bit of grass, surely.
I mean, there are some, but they are few and far between. They require an awful lot of money. And it's generally the people that have a passion for animals that will take them on and see out the rest of their lives. This is not the usual standard. This is a myth perpetuated by the racing industry because they want to keep racing. The vast majority of them, I'm so sorry to say if anyone's eating their breakfast, goes into dog food or they're shipped off to China. You know, the terrible things happen to them. And we don't see that because they don't want us to see that.
Of course, there is the argument that they wouldn't have been bred if it wasn't for horse racing in the first place.
Well, good. Why should they be bred? Why should we be breeding animals into existence?
They go off to China, Saffron.
I think it's well documented. And if you look at the statistics and the figures, the number of horses that are, as you said, being bred and are used in horse racing, the ones that are bred for horse racing and don't make the cut because they're not fast enough, they're not good enough. And then you compare those figures to the number of horses that you think live in this kind of la-la land of rainbows and endless hay, there is a huge disparity. That is your proof. Where are the horses going? And, you know, we know that horse meat goes into dog meat. You know, that's a normal thing. If you look back, you know, I think it was only 10 years ago, horse meat was going into the British food chain. Remember the Findus scandal?
A long time ago, yes, I do.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, but it happened and it was real.
Broadly speaking, is Britain a nation of animal lovers?
I think so.
Then
I think
why is horse racing the country's second favourite sport?
I think that we are, at core, we are compassionate people, and we love our dogs. We love, we're very keen on rescue. This is a British thing that we're rightly very proud of. We treat animals far better than in other countries that probably won't name, but I think part of it is
that
it's the washing, as it were. I don't want to use the word greenwashing, it's not quite right, but it's a really comfortable lie that we want to believe, and we have been fed for centuries decades and decades, is they're treated like kings, and to an extent that is true. They are, until they're not. Then they are not.
If we move lastly away from horse racing to equestrian events at the Olympics, it would appear that Mr. Podolansky would be keen to stop that as well. Would you agree with that?
I mean, there's not a huge amount that I agree with what Podolansky says, but this I do. I think
equestrian events.
Well, I think we need to move away from this idea that animals are there to be exploited for whatever reason. You know, the Olympics is the peak of human athleticism. The Olympics is there for us to, you know, further ourselves and aspire to goals. Why are we using animals to achieve medals?
Well, and if you, you know, equestrian events, talent that's needed, Saffron, to, I don't know how much a horse weighs, a ton, I've no idea, but to move an animal that's weighing half a ton or a ton over a set of jumps and beat the clock, my God, if that's not bravery and skill and a fusion between animal and human, I don't know what is.
Well, I mean, I would go back at you and say things like dressage, hugely, hugely unnatural movements for horses to achieve.
A horse might love it.
That's not what I said. What I said is it's hugely unnatural movements.
Yeah, but the horse
might love it. And in order to achieve those movements,
everybody cheering you because you're doing a little dance? I mean, if that's not a great... And you're in the Olympics. I mean, what a great life for the horse.
I mean, you're being an antagonist. And if you...
I've been rumbled.
If a horse doesn't naturally do a movement, I think we can safely assume they don't, quote-unquote, love it.
Well, hang on, you could say that about pole vaulting, couldn't you? But that's a fantastic piece of athleticism. We don't normally... But if people can do it, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Because they want to do it, and there's their own desire to do it.
Genuinely, a horse might enjoy it. Genuinely, a horse might quite like dancing around a field with everybody applauding.
OK, well, let's take that backwards. We are going to pour in loads of money, breed animals into existence, practice them over and over again, and it's not as if we haven't seen in the press these exposés of these, you know, quite horrific practices to get animals to do the things we want them to do. You know, your argument, that you could say, well, how do we know the bear in the circus with the ring in his nose doesn't enjoy jumping through a hoop for applause? Of course we know that. So why do we accept that, but we don't accept this? I tell you why, because we enjoy it. We like to put a hat on, drink champagne, put on a bet that a few people like to make a lot of money over it. Mm-hmm. And the jockeys and the trainers like the adoration. That's why, if we're going to really get down to the tax of it, that is why.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Have yourself a good weekend. Thank you, Saffron Gloin, animal rights activist and animal rescue campaigner. Luke's in Albrighton. Luke, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm all right. Should we ban horses in racing?
I think it's a ridiculous idea. I mean, these horses are domesticated. They're not wild animals. We can't just let them go.
No.
If we take away their sole purpose, they're going to be slaughtered. People aren't going to keep these animals if they can't use them. And I think that would be a tremendous waste.
I think it's a tremendous sport. It would also be a tremendous waste to the economy. It is worth, in total, £4 billion to the UK economy, Luke.
That's just finances. Think about the enjoyment people get from going to these races, from grooming these horses, from training them. It's more than just monetary value. Like, these horses give people a purpose to exist. It would be ridiculous to just ban the sport because you feel like the horses don't enjoy it. They wouldn't do it if they didn't enjoy it.
Lastly, even equestrian sports at the Olympics is what Mr. Polanski is talking about. That is beyond a stretch to me.
Is I'm not sure where Mr. Polanski gets these ideas, to be honest. It would reduce our standing in the Olympics, which historically we do pretty well at. So why exclude ourselves from certain sports because a small minority of people feel that it's mean to the horse, even though you couldn't make them do it if they didn't want to?
Luke, thank you. More calls coming on this. I just want to feature a couple of emails. The other conversation, Daniel will be the next caller. The other conversation we're having is about Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan's assertion that London is a safe city and there's a campaign of disinformation. He's calling on ministers and indeed ambassadors to spread the real side. This is what he's saying, but somebody picked up on an earlier caller, Jerry. This is from John. So the caller says we should all take care of ourselves when we go around London. Surely that is victim blaming. Interesting point. Also, this is a clever one from Michelle in Staffordshire. If London is so safe, why was there a bag full of police guns left outside the mayor's house by the police? Why would that number of guns be needed in a safe city? That's a very good point. You might see that featured in this weekend's Sunday Express, but Michelle, I won't put your name to it. They'll all think I'm the genius. Coming up after news, Daniel and others will go horse racing, or perhaps we won't. 9:45, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has accused Iran of breaching a fragile ceasefire by restricting oil shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. Survivors of Jeffrey Epstein have criticised Melania Trump following her surprise White House address denying ties to the late sex offender. And a defence minister has insisted to LBC the UK has a strong naval presence which is disrupting and stopping Russian spy missions. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK. Rain moving in from the west by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 remains closed anti-clockwise between junctions 5 at the M26 and junction 4 at Orpington. The emergency works are still taking place after that fuel spillage from much earlier on this morning. One lane stays closed on the A1 northbound at the fairway in Mill Hill, and that's following an accident. Very busy on the A127 westbound heading towards Cuckoo Corner at Southend, and that's because of some debris across the road. On the train, southern services are being diverted via Horsham between Littlehampton and Three Bridges. It's because of a track problem and minor delays on the Piccadilly and Metropolitan and District lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
Israel pounds Lebanon with the toughest bombardment yet. Is Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, the permanent roadblock to peace in the Middle East?
Lewis Goodall at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it, and the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Shop today. Terms apply.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics. At Boots, pharmacies, and vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
A lot of you want to have your say about what Sir Sadiq Khan is saying about London and a campaign of disinformation. But Daniel in Borehamwood's been hanging on the line to talk about horse racing. Zach Polanski wants it banned. Do you? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Absolutely not. And the thing that I don't get, and I just can't get over the irony of it, is all of these so-called animal lovers who are campaigning to stop the horses from racing lock a dog up in their home every night because they love their dog.
Well, I don't know if that lady with whom I was speaking does that, but expand on that point then. You think, in a sense, how do you think the relationship should be between us, humans, and them, the animals?
Well, we are a nation of animal lovers, and we have enjoyed animal husbandry for centuries. Animals have been a huge
guide dogs. So I don't know why I said that out loud. It just suddenly came to me. I doubt that a Labrador, when it's a puppy, thinks, I want to spend my entire life helping some poor blind individual go down to Sainsbury's or Asda. But the dog does, don't they?
Yeah, and does it very well. And everybody respects and appreciates what that dog does, especially, of course, the person that it's directly helping.
Yep.
And nobody questions that dog didn't have a say in what they wanted to do in their life. It's a dog.
Collies.
It's not a human.
A little collie puppy thinks, I don't know, I'm going to spend my whole life running around fields going, moving
running
sheep.
Running around chasing
get back,
sheep.
Get back. Get back. That's how you move a sheepdog around. Get back. But that's what they do.
Exactly. And same with humans. I mean, which child sits in school and thinks about, you know, whatever the most undesirable job is, somebody's going to be doing it.
Yeah.
But that little child isn't sitting there thinking it. people, animals, we all end up doing things in our lives that we don't necessarily dream of doing when we're 6 years old. But we provide pleasure to other people, we provide service and support to other people, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Well said, Daniel. Well said, Greg. As I said guide dogs, you said guide dogs. Well done, Greg. Greg Connolly coming in with guide dogs. Brilliant. On the same theme there. Caroline's in Hampstead. Caroline, your view of horse racing. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. When you watch a race, you will often see a jockey, when it's dismounted,
the horse
will carry on running and even taking all the jumps.
Yes, sometimes they do.
If he didn't enjoy it, he could stop. The other thing is, these people who are objecting to this, would they rather be a horse racing or a cow going to the abattoir if they are meat eaters?
Well, what a question. Would you rather be a horse or a cow?
I'd rather go to the Grand National and go to an abattoir myself.
I'm with you. I don't think I'd make a very good racehorse, let's be honest. I've probably got a few too many pounds. Now, whether I could be used to pull, what is it, a dray horse? Is that what they used to pull, those great trailers full of beer? Caroline, you can be a fleety filly. You'll be up ahead of me in the field, and I'll be tugging the ambulance.
And I promise not to throw you.
Yes, indeed. The horses keep racing. Now, of course, that might be the idea of pack mentality. You know, they're just used to it, and they've got other horses around them. I mean, what would be extraordinary is if a jockey fell off and the horse turned round and just walked back to the start line. That would be sensational, wouldn't it? Caroline, thank you. Ash in Hendon. Ash, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. Right, thank you, sir.
I just wanted to say, you know, it's so much different when you're talking about horses and greyhounds. Horses and greyhounds, they were born and created, right, by the creator God in order to run and race. And that's what they love doing. That's part of their nature.
Hang on. Yeah. But ordered, created so that people could sit in silks and race them in front of thousands of people? Do you think?
The horse doesn't know that. The horse is racing. He's doing what he wants to do. He's doing why do we use horse power? Because that's what the horse has. He's got that power to race.
Yes.
When you bring a bear or a lion to stand up and start dancing and doing all of these acrobatical, they're not going to do that.
No.
They are forced by human beings to do things with against their nature. Here, you're enhancing the animal's nature to do what it was born for. So he's loving it because that's his power. That's what it was born. It's like, you know, putting a bird in a cage or letting the bird fly loose. A horse is born to run.
Ash, thank you. Elaine, coming to you on horses in a moment. Want to pick on Sir Sadiq Khan's comments and what you're saying. Steve says, Boris Johnson rode around London on a bicycle. Sadiq Khan has armed police 24/7. It says it all, surely. Same subject. Actually, Kevin in Wales says virtually the same thing. Sadiq Khan has an armoured Range Rover. No wonder London is safe for him. Simon Crowley in Kemsing, a lovely part of Kent. Sadiq Khan is not telling the truth. Crime has never been higher in London and other cities. People don't report crime because the police and courts are beyond useless. I do sense there's a lot of crime that's sort of been effectively written out of the books. So instead of it being logged as a crime, you get an insurance number. Ah, that's all dealt with. But we don't log the fact that actually your car was nicked, in my case, or whatever else it might be. Neil's in Croydon on this. Neil, what can you tell me about the safety of London or otherwise? Good morning.
Well, I'm calling as an ex-Metropolitan Police officer. London is a relatively safe place. And the comment that you just read out in regards to the text about the guns found outside Sadiq Khan's premises.
Yes.
I mean, Britain is one of the few countries, less than five countries in the world, that are not routinely armed police officers. So we can't be that dangerous, can we?
Well, it's a fair point. From memory, I think it was Michelle in Staffordshire. If it's so safe, why does he need that many guns?
That's because whatever the security and intelligence has got is that his officers that need to give him close protection need to be armed, don't they?
But what about the link-ups that we saw in Clapham?
I don't think there were firearms on the ground.
No, but they speak to individual safety, don't they?
Those are young youths that are mobs and they need to clamp down on it quickly, and I think they have, and it hasn't happened again. It was a one-time thing. I don't think it will happen again. We obviously need to watch summer, but
what about,
I don't think it will happen again.
What about the three killings this week? Three stabbings this week? Three killings. One was a shooting. Three killings this week.
But that's knife crime, and knife crime is a separate. What you're doing is you're bundling in everything you can do.
But isn't that the reality with crime? What about the person beaten to death for his Rolex watch?
Well, these are one-offs. Why don't you compare the crime in London to New York or Los Angeles?
I don't care.
Or Paris
or
Marseille.
I live and work in London. So when the mayor says we're a relatively safe city, I just don't see it, Neil.
So would you like our police officers then, on that basis, would you like our police officers then to be routinely armed and walk around with automatic rifles,
no.
quite big ones like in France, Spain?
No.
Then that's the only way. That's the only way you're going to really deter people from doing those sporadic crimes.
Neil, enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. It's back to the races, or is it, with the Green Party. Alex in Eastbourne. Alex, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Racing is disgraceful. I had a friend who had a stud farm mm-hmm. who had horses stay there. Race horses, polo horses, mm-hmm. all going for slaughter. Store them. Yeah, he used to store them for the slaughterman every week who travelled round the country picking them up.
Right, right.
And then they used to go off to France.
Right, but we also know there are people who look after these racehorses. I'm not pretending that every single horse that's ever raced will be living an idyllic life in some lovely corner of the United Kingdom eating grass. I'm sure it's not the case, but I don't think we can say that they all universally are treated like that, Alex, either, can we?
Yeah, you have to see how many this guy picked up week in, week out.
But you have to see how many horses there are that are racing. Does that happen? Yes, it does. Does it happen to every horse? I would say not. Alex, thank you. Elaine in Camden, you've got just under a minute. I'll say nothing, you say everything. Elaine, go. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. So to support Zach Polanski's argument, and I think it's important that we delve a bit deeper. So just for the ban in horse races, I personally think steeplechases, high mortality, but mm-hmm. let me give you the true picture. High fatality and injury rates, forced misuse and physical damage, whipping. Horse races typically often start racing before 2 years old when their bones are not fully developed and causing immense strain. Wasted and slaughter, many thoroughbreds are bred for racing. Those who are not fast enough are deemed surplus and sent to slaughterhouses. They're whipped. And we are basically using and exploiting sentient animals, intelligent animals, purely for entertainment.
You're against it as well, Elaine. Thank you. That's what a conversation is all about. But I'm over my time. I'm done. Lewis Goodall is in for James O'Brien, the other side of the news. I'll be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
Thanks so much, Nick, and enjoy the National. In the last 24 hours, the Lebanon ceasefire has looked less like a deal, more like a delusion. Israel has struck across the south. Hezbollah apparently still firing back as well, remaining intact. Civilians, as ever in the Middle East, caught in the crossfire. Israel says that it's self-defense after October the 7th. Of course, that case matters. But self-defense always has limits, because if your actions entrench Hezbollah, as they seem to have done over the last 20 years, destabilize any prospect of peace, then you are the impediment to peace. It's a very simple question this morning. What is Israel's strategy here? Because right now, it doesn't look like security. It looks like escalation without an endgame.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump has accused Iran of breaching a fragile ceasefire by restricting oil shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. He's warned Tehran against charging transit fees ahead of planned peace talks in Pakistan tomorrow. Iran's supreme leader has said that management of the strait is entering a new phase without giving more details. Speaking last night, the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, said that she's working to prioritise Britain's national interests.
Today we know more than ever that freedom of navigation is the underpinning of global trade. And it matters for every sea, every ocean, every strait. Every country has a stake in this. Every industry is affected by it.
The US First Lady has caused confusion with a surprise statement denying that she'd ever, ever had a relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. It's unclear whether President Trump knew that she was planning the address at the White House. Melania Trump also called for survivors of Jeffrey Epstein to be offered congressional hearings to share their stories. One of Epstein's survivors, Lisa Phillips, hopes that Mrs. Trump acts further.
Why would you make a statement like that and then not do anything? Mm-hmm.
I'm just always like an optimist, first of all, but also like, what are you going to do? If you want to see justice or accountability, and so do all the survivors and the American people, what's the next step there?
Russia has announced a ceasefire in Ukraine for Orthodox Easter this weekend. It'll come into effect tomorrow afternoon and last 32 hours. British holidaymakers are being warned to be aware of additional checks with the EU's new entry-exit system. It's due to be fully implemented at all European airports and ports from today. It'll see the stamping of passports scrapped in favour of visitors registering their biometric details instead. The system's been brought in to strengthen border security and to improve processing speeds at airports. And NASA says there'll be anxious moments as the Artemis II crew re-enters Earth's atmosphere at speeds of around 25,000 miles per hour. Officials say they have full confidence, though, in the four astronauts on board the Orion spacecraft. It'll splash down off the coast of California in the early hours of Saturday morning UK time. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 24 points at 10,624. The pound bought $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather turning increasingly cloudy and windy for large parts of the UK through Friday. Rain will move in from the west by the late afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a bank holiday weekend? Traffic. Drizzle. Service station snacks. The sea.
Look, the sea!
Pebbly beach. Aggressive seagulls. Drinks at the local cafe / nightclub. A late night takeaway.
Chili, garlic.
Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 10:03. Listening to Lewis Goodall here for James O'Brien here on LBC Final Day this week. And we're just going to start, get straight into it. What is Israel up to? What is Israel up to? What is its strategy? What is its end game? Because we have reached the end of a week where briefly, fleetingly, we seem to get vanishingly close to at least a cessation of the fighting and some modicum of stability in Iran on the Straits of Hormuz, unlocking some economic relief for a world which is hurtling towards recession in a way that I think most people, including even politicians in this country, haven't fully woken up to yet, but also, most crucially of all, some relief for innocent civilians in the region. And yet here we are on Friday with even a temporary ceasefire apparently as illusory as an out of reach as ever, largely because, and we can discuss whether this is justified or not, Israel appears to be blocking it. In the last 24 hours, the Lebanon ceasefire, which according to the Iranians has proved itself to be the impediment to the ceasefire coming into effect. The Lebanon part of this conflict has looked less like a deal and more like a illusion. In fact, what we're seeing in Lebanon isn't just an escalation. It is something close to societal collapse in the south of the country. Israeli strikes have killed, depending on the count, well over 250 in a single wave, possibly more than 300, with more than 1,000 injured. It's the heaviest bombardment we've seen in the war so far. Hospitals overwhelmed, supplies running out, more than 1 million people, 8 million people, a city the size of Birmingham, and what, I think roughly a sixth or so, maybe a little bit less, of the country's overall population displaced. And of course, this has had consequences, and the consequences are that Iran has continued to close the Hormuz Strait. Donald Trump has criticized Iran's handling of that in a series of Truth Social posts. He says that Iran is doing a very poor job of managing the waterway, where, of course, we remind you, 20% of the world's oil passes, and has warned Tehran against charging fees for tankers going through, coming, as I say, as fighting continues between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon, with strikes reported overnight. And of course, those strikes are not just in one direction. Hezbollah is battering northern Israel as well. This is all coming ahead of what are supposed to be scheduled peace talks in Pakistan over the weekend, due to be attended by US Vice President J.D. Vance. But so far, we understand there is no sign of the Iranian delegation, despite the fact that they had tweeted that they were going to be turning up there, I think, today. No sign of them yet. And indeed, no sign from the Pakistanis that they're due to arrive anytime today, because that tweet, in fact, was deleted. So we have a situation where there is nothing but chaos in southern Lebanon. And the question, of course, has to be for us, why? Why is Israel choosing to press ahead just at the moment that the two primary combatants in this war, US and Iran, were willing to step away from the brink, however so briefly? Because Israel, in this case, is not even continuing at the pace it was at in terms of what they were doing in Lebanon during the war, but they are doing more. They're going further. They're pressing faster, and they're displacing more people and killing more people as well. Some of whom, doubtless, terrible Hezbollah combatants who are awful people who have done awful things, but doubtless also many dozens and scores and perhaps hundreds of civilians as well. So I ask again, 0345 6060 973, what is it that they're doing and why are they doing it? What is the strategy? Yesterday, and I think this is very revealing and interesting, just I think worth playing again in case you missed it yesterday, heaven forfend, I spoke to the freelance reporter in Jerusalem, Noga Tonopolsky. She laid the blame at this firmly at Benjamin Netanyahu's door, but not just Benjamin Netanyahu. The pressure that he's under, and this is something I think we don't understand and appreciate enough, the pressure that he comes under internally from his own coalition, which, remember, contains, and I use this word entirely advisedly, far-right radical elements.
The elephant in your conversation with Mr. Gandler, of course, is Mr. Netanyahu's political predicament. In other words, it may be the right decision for Israel, including in its position as an ally to the United States, to accept a two-week ceasefire also with Lebanon. It makes a lot of sense. But politically, Netanyahu cannot do it. Netanyahu promised safety for the north, and as long as Hezbollah is operating in the south, even if it's not bombing Israel, which today it is, it's bombing nonstop. But even if Hezbollah is not bombing Israel, if it's just gathering its forces, if it's building up its weapons stocks, if it's terrorizing residents of villages in the south, he has not fulfilled a promise that is a political kryptonite for him. And so Netanyahu he doesn't have the wherewithal to tell Israelis, we're accepting this two-week ceasefire. We know this is upheaval in your life. We know many of you can't even live at home. Your kids haven't